How's our new seer holding up? I pulled back to explain that I'd left Elaine to her own thoughts, but Nesta said, "Don't call her that." Rhys gave me an incredulous look, but Nesta just went back to flipping through a book, her face going vacant, while she practiced with whatever wall-building exercises Amryn had ordered. I poked him in the ribs. "Don't provoke her." A corner of his mouth lifted, the expression full of wicked delight. "Can I provoke you instead?" I clamped my lips to keep from smiling. The front door blew open and Amryn stormed in. Rhys was instantly facing her.
"What?"
Gone was the slick amusement, the relaxed posture. Amryn's pale face remained calm, but her eyes, they swirled with rage.
"Hybern has attacked the summer court. They lay siege to Adriada as we speak."
Chapter 35. Hybern had made its grand move at last, and we had not anticipated it. I knew Azriel would take the blame upon himself. One look at the Shadow Singer as he prowled through the front door of the townhouse minutes later, Cassian on his heels, told me that he already did. We stood in the foyer, Nesta lingering at the dining table behind me.
"Has Tarquin called for aid?"
Cassian asked Amryn. None of us dared question how she knew. Amryn's jaw tightened.
"I don't know. I got the message and nothing else."
Cassian nodded once and turned to Rhys.
"Did the Summer Court have a mobile fighting force readied when you were there?"
"No,"
Rhys said.
"His armada was scattered along the coast."
A glance at Azriel.
"Half is in Adriada. The other dispersed," the Shadow Singer supplied. "His terrestrial army was moved to the Spring Court border, after Feyre. The closest legion is perhaps 3 days' march away. Very few can winnow."
"How many ships?"
Rhys asked.
20 in Adriada, fully armed."
A calculating look at Amryn.
"Numbers on Hybern?"
"I don't know, many. I think they are overwhelmed."
"What was the exact message?"
Pure, unrelenting command laced every word. Amryn's eyes glittered like fresh silver.
"It was a warning from Varian to prepare our own defenses."
Utter silence.
"Prince Varian sent you a warning?"
Cassian asked a bit quietly. Amryn glared at him.
"It is a thing that friends do."
More silence. I met Rhys's stare, sensed the weight and dread and anger simmering behind the cool features.
"We cannot leave Tarquin to face them alone," I said.
"Perhaps Hybern had sent the ravens yesterday to distract us from looking beyond our own borders, to have our focus on Hybern, not our own shores." Rhys's attention cut to Cassian.
"Kier and his Darkbringer army are nowhere near ready to march. How soon can the Illyrian legions fly?"
Rhys immediately winnowed Cassian into the war camps to give the orders himself. Azriel had vanished with them, going ahead to scout Adriada, taking his most trusted spies with him.
Nausea had churned in my gut as Cassian and Azriel tapped the siphons atop their hands, and that scaled armor unfurled across their body. As 7 siphons appeared on each, as the Shadow Singer's scarred hands checked the buckles on his knife belts and his quiver, while Rhys summoned extra Illyrian blades for Cassian, 2 at his back, 1 at each side. Then they were gone, stone-faced and steady, ready for bloodshed. More arrived moments later, heavily armed, her hair braided back and every inch of her thrumming with impatience. But More and I waited for the order to go, to join them. Cassian had positioned the Illyrian legions closer to the southern border the weeks I'd been away. But even so, they wouldn't be able to fly without a few hours of preparation.
And it would require Rhys to winnow them in. All of them.
To Adriata.
Will you fight?
Nesta was now standing a few steps up the staircase of the townhouse, watching as Moore and I readied.
Soon. Asriel or Rhys would contact us soon with the all-clear to winnow to Adriata.
We'll fight if it's required, I said, checking once more that the belt of knives was secure at my hips. Moore wore Illyrian leathers as well, but the blades on her were different. Slimmer, lighter, some of their tips slightly curved, like lightning given flesh. Seraphim blades, she told me, gifted to her by Prince Draken himself during the war.
What do you know of battle?
I couldn't tell if my sister's tone was insulting or merely inquisitive.
We know plenty, Moore said tightly,
arranging her long braid between the blades crossed over her back. Elaine and Nesta would remain here, with Amryn watching over them, and watching over Velaris, along with a small legion of Illyrians Cassian had ordered to camp in the mountains above the city.
Moore had passed Amryn on her way in, the small female apparently heading to the butcher to fill up on provisions before she'd return to stay here, for however long we'd be in Adriata, if we returned at all.
I met Nesta's gaze again. Only wary distance greeted me. We'll send word when we can. A rumble of midnight thunder brushed against the walls of my mind. A silent signal, speared over land and mountains, as if Rhys's concentration was now wholly focused elsewhere, and he did not dare break it. My heart stumbled a beat. I gripped Moore's arm, the leather scales cutting into my palm. They've arrived. Let's go. Moore turned to my sister, and I had never seen her seem so warrior-like. I'd known it lurked beneath the surface, but here was the Morrigan, the female who had fought in the war, who knew how to end lives with blade and magic.
It's nothing we can't handle,
Moore said to Nesta with a cocky smile, and then we were gone. Black wind roared and tore at me, and I clung to Moore as she winnowed us through the courts, her breath a ragged beat in my ear. Then blinding light and suffocating heat and screams and thunderous booming and metal on metal. I swayed, bracing my feet apart as I blinked, as I took in my surroundings. Rhys and the Illyrians had already joined the fray.
Moore had winnowed us to the barren top of one of the hills flanking the half-moon bay of Adriata, offering perfect views of the island city in its center and the city on the mainland below.
The waters of the bay were red. Smoke rose in gnarled black columns from buildings and foundering ships. People screamed. Soldiers shouted.
So many.
I had not anticipated the scope of how many soldiers there would be, on either side. I'd thought it would be neat lines, not chaos everywhere. Not Illyrians in the skies above the city and the harbor blasting their power and arrows into the Hybern army that rained hell upon the city. Ship after ship squatted toward the horizon, hemming either entrance to the bay. And in the bay.
Those are Tarquin's ships, Moore said. Her face taut as she pointed to the white sails colliding with terrible force against the gray sails of Hybern's fleet.
Utterly outnumbered, and yet plumes of magic, water and wind and whips of vines kept attacking any boat that neared. And those that broke through the magic faced soldiers armed with spears and bows and swords. And ahead of them, pushing against the fleet, the Illyrian lines.
So many.
Rhys had winnowed them in, all of them. The drain on his power. Moore's throat bobbed.
No one else has come, she murmured. No other courts.
No sign of Tamlin and the Spring Court on Hybern's side either. A thunderous boom of dark power blasted into Hybern's fleet, scattering ships, but not many. As if Rhys's power is either already nearly spent or they've got something working against it, I said.
More of that Feybane? Highburn would be stupid not to use it.
Her fingers curled and uncurled at her sides, sweat beaded on her temple.
More?
I knew it was coming, she murmured.
Another war at some point. I knew battles would come for this war, but I forgot how terrible it is. The sounds. The smells.
Indeed, even from the rocky outcropping so high above, it was overwhelming. The tang of blood, the pleading and screaming. Getting into the midst of it. Alice.
Alice had left the Spring Court, fearing the hell I'd unleash there, only to come here. To this.
I prayed she was not in the city proper. Prayed she and her nephews were keeping safe.
We're to go to the palace, Moore said, squaring her shoulders. I hadn't dared break Rhysand's concentration by opening up a channel in the bond, but it seemed he was still capable of giving orders. Soldiers have reached its northern side, and their defenses are surrounded.
I nodded once, and Moore drew her slender, curving blade. It gleamed as brightly as Amryn's eyes, that seraphim steel. I unsheathed my Illyrian blade from across my back, the metal dark and ancient by comparison to the living silver flame in her hand.
We stick close. You don't get out of sight, Moore said smoothly and precisely. We don't go down a hall or stairwell without assessing first. I nodded again, at a loss for words. My heart beat at a gallop. My palms turned sweaty. Water. I wished I'd had some water. My mouth had gone bone dry.
If you can't bring yourself to make the kill, she added, without a hint of judgment, then shield me from behind.
I can do it. The killing, I rasped. I'd done plenty of it that day in Valaris.
Moore assessed the grip I maintained on my blade, the set of my shoulders.
Don't stop and don't linger. We press forward until I say we retreat. Leave the wounded to the healers.
None of them enjoyed this, I realized. My friends, they had gone to war and back and had not found it worthy of glorification, had not let its memory become rose-tinted in the centuries following. But they were willing to dive into its hell once again for the sake of Prithian.
Let's go, she said.
Every moment we wasted here could spell someone's doom in that gleaming palace in the bay.
Moore swallowed once and winnowed us into the palace.
She must have visited a few times throughout the centuries because she knew where to arrive. The middle levels of Tarquin's palace had been communal space between the lower floors that the servants and lesser fairies were shoved into, and the shining residential quarters for the high fae above. When I had last seen the vast greeting hall, the light had been clear and white, flitting off the seashell-encrusted walls, dancing along the running rivers built into the floor. The sea beyond the towering windows had been turquoise, mottled with vibrant sapphire. Now that sea was choked with mighty ships and blood, the clear skies full of Illyrian warriors swooping down upon them in determined, unflinching lines. Thick metal shields glinted as the Illyrians dove and rose, emerging each time covered in blood. If they returned to the skies at all. But my task was here. This building. We scanned the floor, listening. Frantic murmurs echoed from the stairwells leading upward, along with heavy thudding.
They're barricading themselves into the upper levels, Moore observed as my brows narrowed, leaving the lesser fae trapped below, with no aid.
Bastards, I breathed. The lesser fae didn't have as much magic between them, not in the way the high fae did.
This way, Moore said, jerking her chin toward the descending stairs. They're three levels down and climbing, 50 of them.
A ship's worth. Chapter 36. The first and second kills were the hardest. I didn't waste physical strength on the cluster of five Highburn soldiers, high fae, not adder-like underlings,
forcing their way into a barricaded room full of terrified servants. No. Even as my body hesitated at the kills, my magic did not. The two soldiers nearest me had feeble shields. I tore through them with a sizzling wall of fire. Fire that then found its way down their throats and burned every inch of the way. And then sizzled through skin and tendon and bone, and severed the heads from their bodies. Morgis killed the soldier nearest her with good old-fashioned beheading. She whirled, the soldier's head still falling, and sliced off the head of one just nearing us. The fifth and final soldier stopped his assault on the battered door, looked between us with flat, hate-bright eyes.
"Do it, then,"
he said, his accent so like that of the Raven's. His thick sword rose, blood sliding down the groove of the fuller. Someone was sobbing in terror on the other side of that door. The soldier lunged for us, and Moore's blade flashed. But I struck first, an asp of pure water striking his face, stunning him, then shoving down his open mouth, his throat, up his nose, sealing off any air. He slumped to the ground, clawing at his neck as if he'd free a passage for the water now drowning him. We left him without looking back, the grunting of his choking soon turning to silence. Moore slid me a sidelong glance. "Remind me not to get on your bad side." I appreciated the attempt at humor, but laughter was foreign. It was only the breath in my heaving lungs and the roiling of magic through my veins and the clear, unyielding crispness of my vision, assessing all. We found 8 more in the midst of killing and hurting, a dormitory turned into Highburn's own sick pleasure hall. I didn't care to linger on what they did, and only marked it so that I knew how fast and easily to kill. The ones merely slaughtering died fast, the others. Moore and I lingered. Not much, but those deaths were slower. We left 2 of them alive, hurt and disarmed, but alive, for the surviving fairies to kill. I gave them 2 Illyrian knives to do it. The Highburn soldiers began screaming before we cleared the level. The hallway on the floor below was splattered in blood. The din was deafening. A dozen soldiers in the silver and blue armor of Tarquin's court battled against the bulk of Highburn force, holding the corridor. They were nearly pushed back to the stairs we'd just exited. Steadily overwhelmed by the solid numbers against them, the Highburn soldiers stepping on the bodies of the fallen Summer Court warriors. Tarquin's soldiers were flagging, even as they kept swinging, kept fighting. The closest one beheld us, opened his mouth to order us to run, but then he noted the armor, the blood on us and our blades. "Don't be afraid," Moore said, as I stretched out a hand and darkness fell. Soldiers on both sides shouted, scrambling back, armor clanging. But I shifted my eyes, made them night-seeing, as I had done in that Illyrian forest when I had first drawn Highburn blood. Moore, I think, was born able to see in the darkness. We winnowed through the ebon-veiled corridor in short bursts. I could see their terror as I killed them, but they could not see me. Every time we appeared in front of Highburn soldiers, frantic in the impenetrable dark, their heads fell, one after another. Winnow, slash, winnow, thump. Until there were none left. Only the mounds of their bodies, the puddles of their blood. I banished the darkness from the corridor, finding the Summer Court soldiers panting and gaping. At us. At what we had done in a matter of a minute. I didn't look too long at the carnage. Moore didn't either. Where else? Was all I asked. We cleared the palace to its lowest levels, then we took to the city streets, the steep hill leading down to the water rampant with Highburn soldiers. The morning sun rose higher, beating down on us, making our skin slick and swollen with sweat beneath our leathers. I stopped discerning the sweat on my palms from the blood coating it. I stopped being able to feel a great many things as we killed and killed, sometimes engaging in outright combat, sometimes with magic, sometimes earning our own bruises and small wounds.
But the sun continued its arc across the sky, and the battle continued in the bay. The Illyrian lines battering the Hybern fleet from above, while Tarquin's armada pushed from behind. Slowly, we purged the streets of Hybern soldiers. All I knew was the sun baking the blood coating my skin, the coppery tang of it clinging to my nostrils. We had just cleared a narrow street, more striding through the felled Hybern soldiers to make sure any survivors stopped surviving. I leaned against a blood-bathed stone wall just outside the shattered front window of a clothier, watching Moore's quicksilver blade rise and fall in lightning-bright flashes. Beyond us, all around us, the screams of the dying were like the never-ending pealing of the city's warning bells. Water. I needed water, if only to wash the blood from my mouth. Not my own blood, but that of the soldiers we'd cut down. Blood that had sprayed into my mouth, up my nose, into my eyes, when we'd ended them. Moore reached the last of the dead, and terrified high fae and fairies finally poked their heads out of the doorways and windows flanking the cobblestone streets. No sign of Alice, her nephews or cousin, or anyone who looked like them, amongst the living or the fallen. A small blessing. We had to keep moving. There were more, so many more. As Moore began striding back to me, boots sloshing through puddles of blood, I reached a mental hand toward the bond, toward Rhys, toward anything that was solid and familiar. Wind and darkness answered me. I became only half aware of the narrow street, and the blood and the sun as I peered down the bridge between us. Rhys. Nothing. I speared myself along it, stumbling blindly through that raging tempest of night and shadow. If the bond sometimes felt like a living band of light, it now had turned into a bridge of ice-kissed obsidian. And rising up on its other end, his mind. The walls, his shields, they had turned into a fortress. I laid a mental hand to the black adamant, my heart thundering. What was he facing? What was he seeing to have made his shield so impenetrable? I couldn't feel him on the other side. There was only the stone and the dark and the wind. Rhys. Moore had nearly reached me when his answer came. A crack in the shield so swift that I did not have time to do anything more than lunge for it before it closed behind me, sealing me inside with him. The streets, the sun, the city vanished. There was only here, only him, and the battle. Looking through Rhysand's eyes as I once had that day under the mountain, I felt the heat of the sun, the sweat and blood sliding down his face, slipping beneath the neck of his black Illyrian armor. Smelled the brine of the sea and the tang of blood all around me. Felt the exhaustion ripping at him, in his muscles and in his magic. Felt the Hybern warship shudder beneath him as he landed on its main deck, an Illyrian blade in each hand. 6 soldiers died instantly, their armor and bodies turning into red and silver mist. The others halted, realizing who'd landed amongst them, in the heart of their fleet. Slowly, Rhys surveyed the helmeted heads before him, counted the weapons. Not that it mattered. All of them would soon be crimson mist, or food for the beasts, circling the waters around the clashing armada. And then this ship would be splintered on the waves. Once he was done. It was not the common foot soldiers he'd sought out. Because where power should have been thrumming from him, obliterating them, it was a muffled rumble, stifled. He'd tracked it here. That strange damper on his power, on the siphon's power, as if some sort of spell had turned his power oily in his grip, harder to wield. It was why the battle had gone on so long. The clean, precise blow he'd intended to land upon arriving, the single shot that would have saved so many lives, it had slipped from his grasp. So he'd hunted it down, that damper.
battled his way across Adriata to get to this ship.
And now, exhaustion starting to rip at him, the armed soldiers around Rhysand parted. And he appeared. Trapped within Rhysand's mind, his powers stifled and body weary, there was nothing I could do but watch as the King of Highburn stepped from below decks and smiled at my mate. Chapter 37. Blood slid from the tips of Rhys's twin blades onto the deck. One drop, two, three. Mother above. The king. The King of Highburn wore his own colors, slate gray, embroidered with bone-colored thread. Not a weapon on him, not a speckle of blood. Within Rhys's mind, there was no jagged breath for me to take, no heartbeat to thunder in my chest. There was nothing I could do but watch. Watch and keep quiet so I didn't distract him, didn't risk taking his focus away for one blink. Rhys met the king's dark eyes, bright beneath heavy brows, and smiled.
Glad to see you're still not fighting your own battles.
The king's answering smile was a brutal slash of white.
I was waiting for more interesting quarry to find me.
His voice was colder than the highest peak of the Illyrian Mountains. Rhys didn't dare look away from him, not as his magic unfurled, sniffing out every angle to kill the king. A trap. It had been a trap to discover which High Lord hunted down the source of that damper first. Rhys had known one of them. The king, his cronies, would be waiting here. He'd known. And come. Known and not asked us to help him. If I was smart, Rhys said to me, his voice calm and steady, I'd find some way to take him alive, make Asriel break him, get him to yield the cauldron, and make an example of him to the other bastards thinking of bringing down that wall. Don't, I begged him. Just kill him. Kill him and be done with it, Rhys. End this war before it can truly begin. A pause of consideration. But a death here, quick and brutal. His followers would turn it against me, no doubt. If he could manage it. The king had not been fighting, had not depleted his reserves of power, but Rhys. I felt Rhys size up the odds alongside me. Let one of us come to you. Don't face him alone. Because trying to take the king alive without full access to his power? Information rippled into me, brimming with all Rhys had seen and learned. Taking the king alive depended on whether Asriel was in good enough shape to help. He and Cassian had taken a few blows themselves, but nothing they couldn't handle. Nothing to spook the Illyrians still fighting under their command. Yet.
Seems like the tide is turning,
Rhys observed, as the armada around them indeed pushed Highburn's forces out to sea. He had not seen Tarquin, or Varian and Cresseida. But the Summer Court still fought, still pushed Highburn back, back, back from the harbor. Time. Rhys needed time. Rhys lunged toward the king's mind and met nothing. Not a trace, not a whisper. As if he were nothing but wicked thought and ancient malice. The king clicked his tongue.
I'd heard that you were a charmer, Rhysand. Yet here you are, groping and pawing at me like a green youth.
A corner of Rhys's mouth twitched up.
Always a delight to disappoint, Highburn.
Oh, on the contrary, the king said, crossing his arms, muscle shifting beneath. You've always been such a source of entertainment, especially for my darling Amarantha.
I felt it, the thought that escaped Rhys. He wanted to wipe that name from living memory. Perhaps one day he would. One day he'd erase it from every mind in this world, one by one, until she was no one and nothing. But the king knew that. From that smile,
He knew. And everything he had done. All of it.
Kill him, Rhys. Kill him and be done with it.
It's not that easy,
was his even reply.
Not without searching this ship, searching him for that source of the spell on our power and breaking it.
But if he lingered much longer, I had no doubt the king had some nasty surprise waiting, designed to spring shut at any moment. I knew Rhys was aware of it too. Knew because he rallied his magic, assessing and weighing, an asp, ready to strike.
The last report I received from Amarantha,
the king went on, sliding his hands into his pockets.
She was still enjoying you.
The soldiers laughed. My mate was used to it, that laughter, even if it made me want to roar at them, rend them to pieces. But Rhys didn't so much as grit his teeth, though the king gave him a smile that told me he was well aware of what sort of scars lingered, what my mate had done to keep Amarantha distracted, why he'd done it. Rhys smirked. Too bad it didn't end so pleasantly for her. His magic slithered through the ship, hunting down that tether for the power holding back our forces. Kill him now! The word was a chant in my blood, my mind. In his, too, I could hear it, clear as my own thoughts.
Such a remarkable girl, your mate,
the king mused. No emotion, not so much as a bit of anger beyond that cold amusement.
First Amarantha, then my pet the Ador, and then she broke past all the wards around my palace to aid your escape. Not to mention,
a low laugh,
my niece and nephew.
Rage. That was rage starting to blacken in his eyes.
She savaged Dagon and Branna. And for what reason? Perhaps you should ask Tamlin.
Rhys raised a brow.
Where is he, by the way? Tamlin.
Hybern savored the name, the sound of it.
He has plans for you, after what you and your mate did to him. His court. What a mess for him to clean up, though she certainly made it easier for me to plant more of my troops in his lands.
Mother above, I'd done that.
She'll be happy to hear that.
Too long. Rhys had lingered too long, and facing him now, fight or run, run or fight.
Where did her gifts come from, I wonder? Or who?
The king knew. What I was, what I possessed.
I'm a lucky male to have her as my mate.
The king smiled again.
For the little time you have remaining.
I could have sworn Rhys blocked out the words. The king went on casually.
It will take everything you know to try to stop me. Everything you have. And it still won't be enough. And when you have given everything, and you are dead, Rhysand, when your mate is mourning over your corpse, I am going to take her.
Rhys didn't let a flicker of emotion show, sliding on that cool, amused mask over the roaring rage that surrounded me at the thought, the threat, that settled before me like a beast ready to lunge, to defend.
She defeated Amarantha. And the Adder,
Rhys countered.
I doubt you'll be much of an effort either. We'll see. Perhaps I'll give her to Tamlin when I'm done.
Fury heated Rhys's blood, and my own. Strike or flee, Rhys, I begged again. But do it now. Rhys rallied his power, and I felt it rise within him, felt him grappling to sustain his grip on it.
The spell will wear off,
the king said, waving a hand.
Another little trick I picked up while rotting away in Highburn. I don't know what you're talking about.
Rhys said mildly. They only smiled at each other. And then Rhys asked,
Why?
The king knew what he meant.
There was room at the table for everyone. You and your ilk claimed.
The king snorted.
For humans, lesser fairies, for half-breeds. In this new world of yours, there was room at the table for everyone. So long as they thought like you. But the loyalists. How you delighted in shutting us out. Looking down your noses at us.
He gestured to the soldiers monitoring them, the battle in the bay.
You want to know why? Because we suffered. When you stifled us, when you shut us out.
Some of his soldiers grunted their agreement.
I have no interest in spending another 5 centuries seeing my people bow before human pigs. Seeing them clawed a living while you shield and coddle those mortals. Granting them our resources and wealth in exchange for nothing.
He inclined his head.
So, we shall reclaim what is ours. What was always ours, and will always be ours.
Rhys offered him a sly grin.
You can certainly try.
My mate didn't bother saying more as he hurled a slender javelin of power at him, the shot as precise as an arrow. And when it reached the king, it went right through him. It rippled, then steadied. An illusion, a shade. The king rumbled a laugh.
Did you think I'd appear at this battle myself?
He waved a hand toward the soldiers still watching.
A taste. This battle is only a taste for you, to whet your appetite.
Then he was gone, the magic leaking from the boat, the oily sheen it had laid over Rhys's power. It vanished too. Rhys allowed the Highburn soldiers aboard the ship, aboard the ones around him, the honor of at least lifting their blades. Then he turned them all into nothing but red mist and splinters floating on the waves. Chapter 38. Moore was shaking me. I only knew it because Rhys threw me out of his mind the moment he unleashed himself upon those soldiers.
You were here too long,
was all he said, caressing a dark talon down my face. Then I was out, stumbling down the bond, his shield slamming shut behind me.
Thera, Moore was saying, fingers digging into my shoulders through my leathers. Thera!
I blinked. The sun and blood and narrow street coming into focus. Blinked. And then vomited all over the cobblestones between us. People, shaken and petrified, only stared.
This way,
Moore said, and looped her arm around my waist as she led me into a dusty, empty alley, far from watching eyes. I barely took in the city and bay and sea beyond. Barely noticed that a mighty maelstrom of darkness and water and wind was now shoving Highburn's fleet back over the horizon, as if Tarquin's and Rhys's powers had been unleashed by the king's vanishing. I made it to a pile of fallen stones from the half-wrecked building beside us when I vomited again. And again. Moore put a hand on my back, rubbing soothing circles as I retched. I did the same after my first battle. We all did. It wasn't even a battle. Not in the way I'd pictured. Army against army on some unremarkable battlefield. Chaotic and muddy. Even the real battle today had been out on the sea, where the Illyrians were now sailing inland. I couldn't bear to start counting how many made the return trip. I didn't know how Moore or Rhys or Cassian or Asriel could bear it. And what I'd just seen. The king was here. I breathed. Moore's hand stilled on my back. What? I leaned my brow against the sun-warmed brick of the building before me and told her what I'd seen in Rhys's mind. the king. He'd been here and yet not here.
Another trick, another spell. No wonder Rhys hadn't been able to attack his mind. The king hadn't been present to do so.
I closed my eyes as I finished, pressing my brow harder into the brick. Blood and sweat still coated me. I tried to remember the usual fit of my soul in my body, the priority of things, my way of looking at the world. What to do with my limbs in the stillness? How did I usually position my hands without a blade between them? How did I stop moving? Moore squeezed my shoulder as if she understood the racing thoughts, the foreignness of my body. The war had raged for 7 years. Years. How long would this one last?
"We should find the others," she said, and helped me straighten before winnowing us back to the palace towering high above. I couldn't bring myself to send another thought down the bond, see where Rhys was. I didn't want him to see me, feel me in such a state, even if I knew he wouldn't judge. He too had spilled blood on the battlefield today, and many others before it, all my friends had. And I could understand, just for a heartbeat, as the wind tore around us, why some rulers, human and fey, had bowed before Highburn. Bowed, rather than face this. It wasn't only the cost of life that ripped and devastated and sundered. It was the altering of a soul with it. The realization that I could perhaps go back home to Valaris, perhaps see peace achieved and cities rebuilt. But this battle, this war, I would be the thing forever changed. War would linger with me, long after it had ended. Some invisible scar that would, perhaps, fade, but never wholly vanish. But for my home, for Prithian and the human territory and so many others, I would clean my blades and wash the blood from my skin. And I would do it again and again and again. The middle level of the palace was a flurry of motion. Blood-drenched summer court soldiers limped around healers and servants rushing to the injured being laid on the floor. The stream through the center of the hall ran red. More and more winnowed in, borne by wide-eyed High Fae. A few Illyrians, just as bloody but eyes clear, hauled in their own wounded through the open windows and balcony doors. More and I scanned the space, the throngs of people, the reek of death and screams of the injured. I tried to swallow, but my mouth was too dry. "Where are—" I recognized the warrior the same moment he spied me. Varian, kneeling over an injured soldier with his thigh in ribbons, went utterly still as our eyes met. His brown skin was splattered in blood as bright as the rubies they'd sent to us. His white hair plastered to his head, as if he'd just chucked off his helmet. He whistled through his teeth, and a soldier appeared at his side, taking up his position of tying a tourniquet around the hurt male's thigh.
The Prince of Adriada rose to his feet.
I didn't have any magic left in me to shield. After seeing Rhys with the king, there was only an empty pit where my fear had been a wild sea within me. But I felt Moore's power slide into place between us. There was a death promise on my head, from them. Varian approached, slowly, stiffly, as if his entire body ached, though his handsome face revealed nothing, only bone-weary exhaustion. His mouth opened, then shut. I didn't have words either. So Varian rasped, his voice hoarse enough that I knew he'd been screaming for a long, long time.
"He's in the oak dining room."
The one where I had first dined with them. I just nodded at the prince and began easing my way through the crowd, Moore keeping close to my side. I'd thought Varian meant Rhysand, but it was Tarquin who stood in gore-flecked silver armor at the dining table. Maps and charts before him,
Summer court fae, either blood-soaked or pristine, filling the sunny chamber. The High Lord of the Summer Court looked up from the table as we paused on the threshold. Took in me, then more. The kindness, the consideration that I had last seen on the High Lord's face, was gone. Replaced by a grim, cold thing that made my stomach turn. Blood had clotted from a thick slice down his neck, the caked bits crumbling away as Tarquin glanced to the people in the room and said,
"Leave us."
No one even dared glance twice at him as they filed out. I had done a horrible thing the last time we were here. I had lied and stolen. I had torn into his mind and tricked him into believing me innocent, harmless. I didn't blame him for the blood ruby he had sent. But if he sought to exact his vengeance now...
"I heard you two cleared the palace and helped clear the island."
His words were low, lifeless. Moore inclined her head. "Your soldiers fought bravely beside us." Tarquin ignored her, his crushing turquoise eyes upon me, taking in the blood, the wounds, the leathers, then the mating band on my finger. The star sapphire dull, blood-crusted between the delicate folds and arcs of metal.
"I thought you came to finish the job,"
Tarquin said to me. I didn't dare move.
"I heard Tamlin took you. Then I heard the Spring Court fell, collapsed from within, its people in revolt, and you had vanished. And when I saw the Illyrian Legion sweeping in, I thought you had come for me too, to help Highburn finish us off."
Varian had not told him of the message he'd snuck to Amryn. Not a call for aid, but a frantic warning for Amryn to save herself. Tarquin hadn't known that we'd be coming. "We would never ally with Highburn," Moore said.
"I am talking to Feyre Archeron."
I'd never heard Tarquin use that tone. Moore bristled, but said nothing.
"Why?"
Tarquin demanded, sunlight glinting on his armor, whose delicate overlapping scales were fashioned after a fish's. I didn't know what he meant. Why had we deceived and stolen from him? Why had we come to help? Why to both? "Our dreams are the same," was all I could think to say. A united realm in which lesser fairies were no longer shoved down, a better world. The opposite of what Highburn fought for, what his allies fought for.
"Is that how you justified stealing from me?"
My heart stumbled a beat. Rhysand said from behind me, no doubt having winnowed in,
"My mate and I had our reasons, Tarquin."
My knees nearly buckled at the evenness in his voice, at the blood-speckled face that still revealed no sign of great injury, at the dark armor, the twin to Asriel's and Cassian's, that had held intact, despite a few deep scratches I could barely stand to note. Cassian and Asriel? Fine. Overseeing the Illyrian injured and setting up camp in the hills. Tarquin glanced between us.
"Mate."
"Wasn't it obvious?"
Rhysand asked with a wink. But there was an edge in his eyes, sharp and haunted. My chest tightened. Did the king leave some sort of trap to... He slid a hand against my back.
"No. No, I'm all right. Pissed I didn't see that he was an illusion, but fine."
Tarquin's face didn't so much as shift from that cold wrath.
"When you went into the Spring Court and deceived Tamlin as well about your true nature, when you destroyed his territory, you left the door open for Highburn. They docked in his harbors.
No doubt to wait for the wall to collapse and then sail south." Tarquin snarled.
"It was an easy trip to my doorstep. You did this."
I could have sworn I felt Rhys flinch through the bond, but my mate said calmly,
"We did nothing.
Highburn chooses its actions, not us.
He jerked his chin toward Tarquin.
My force shall remain camped in the hills until you've deemed the city secure. Then we will go.
And you plan to steal anything else before you do?
Rhys went utterly still.
Debating, I realized whether to apologize, explain. I spared him from the choice.
Tend to your wounded, Tarquin.
Don't give me orders.
The face of the former Summer Court Admiral,
the prince who had commanded the fleet in the harbor until the title was thrust upon him.
I took in the weariness fogging his eyes, the anger and grief.
People had died. Many people. The city he had fought so hard to rebuild, the people who had tried to fight past the scars of Amarantha.
We are at your disposal, I said to him, and walked out.
Moore kept close, and we emerged into the hall to find a cluster of his advisors and soldiers watching us carefully. Behind us, Rhys said to Tarquin,
I didn't have a choice. I did it to try to avoid this, Tarquin, to stop Highburn before he got this far.
His voice was strained. Tarquin only said,
Get out and take your army with you. We can hold the bay now that they don't have surprise on their side.
Silence. Moore and I lingered just outside the open doors, not turning back, but both of us listening. Listening as Rhysand said,
I saw enough of Highburn in the war to tell you this attack is just a fraction of what the king plans to unleash.
A pause.
Come to the meeting, Tarquin. We need you. Prithian needs you.
Another beat of quiet. Then Tarquin said,
Get out.
Feyre's offer holds. We are at your disposal.
Take your mate and leave. And I'd suggest warning her not to give High Lord's orders.
I stiffened, about to whirl around, when Rhys said,
She is a High Lady of the Night Court. She may do as she wishes.
The wall of Fae standing before us withdrew slightly, now studying me, some gaping. A murmur rippled through them. Tarquin let out a low, bitter laugh.
You do love to spit on tradition.
Rhys didn't say anything more, his strolling footstep sounding over the tiled floor until his hand warmed my shoulder. I looked up at him, aware of all who gawked at us, at me. Rhys pressed a kiss to my sweaty, blood-crusted temple, and we vanished. Chapter 39
The Illyrian camp remained in the hills above Adriata,
mostly because there were so many injured that we couldn't move them until they'd healed enough to survive it. Wings shredded, guts dangling out, faces mauled. I don't know how my friends were still standing as they tended to the wounded as much as they could. I barely saw Azriel, who had set up a tent to organize the information pouring in from his scouts. The Highburn fleet had retreated. Not to the Spring Court, but across the sea. No sign of any other forces waiting to strike. No whisper of Tamlin or Jurien. Cassian, though. He limped through the injured laid out on the rocky, dry ground, offering kernels of praise or comfort to the soldiers who had not yet been tended. With the siphons, he could do quick battlefield patching, but nothing extensive, nothing intricate. His face, whenever we crossed paths as I fetched supplies for the healers working without rest, was grave, gaunt. He still wore his armor, and though he'd rinsed the blood from his skin, it clung near the neck of his breastplate. The dullness in his hazel eyes was the same as that glazing my own, and Moore's. But Rhys, his eyes were clear, alert. His expression grim, but it was to him the soldiers looked. And he was everything he should be. A High Lord, confident in his victory, whose forces had smashed through the Highburn fleet and saved a city of innocents.
The toll it had taken on his own soldiers was difficult, but a worthy cost for victory. He strolled through the camp, overseeing the wounded, the information Asriel handed him, checking in with his commanders, still in his Illyrian armor, but wings gone. They'd vanished before he'd appeared in Tarquin's chamber. The sun set, leaving a blanket of darkness over the city lying below. So much darker than I'd last beheld it, alive and glittering with light. But this new darkness, we had seen it in Valaris after the attack. We now knew it too well. Fae lights bobbed over our camp, gilding the talons of all those Illyrian wings as they worked or lay injured. I knew many looked to me, their high lady. But I couldn't muster Rhys's ease, his quiet triumph. So I kept fetching bowls of fresh water, kept hauling away the bloodied ones, helped pin down screaming soldiers until my teeth clacked against each other with the force of their thrashing. I sat down only when my legs could no longer keep me upright, upon an overturned bucket outside the healer's tent. Just a few minutes. I'd sit for just a few minutes. I awoke inside another tent, laid upon a pile of furs, the fae light dim and soft. Rhys sat beside me, legs crossed, his hair in unusual disarray, streaked with blood, as if it had coated his hands when he dragged them through it. How long was I out? My words were a rasp. He lifted his head from where he'd been studying some array of papers spread on the fur before him. 3 hours. Dawn is still far off. You should sleep. But I propped myself on my elbows. You're not. He shrugged, sipping from the water goblet set beside him. I'm not the one who fell face first off a bucket into the mud. His wry smile faded. How are you feeling? I almost said fine, but I'm still figuring out what to feel. A careful nod. Open war is like that. It takes a while to decide how to deal with everything that it brings. The costs. I sat up fully, scanning the papers he'd laid out. Casualty lists. Only 100 or so names on them, but did you know them? The ones who died? His violet eyes shuddered. A few. Tarquin lost many more than we did. Who tells their families? Cassian. He'll send out lists once dawn arrives, when we see who survives the night. He'll visit their families if he knew them. I remembered that Rhys had once told me he'd scanned casualty lists for his friends in the war. The dread they'd all felt, waiting to see if a familiar name was on them. So many shadows clouded those violet eyes. I laid a hand on his own. He studied my fingers on his, the arcs of dirt beneath my fingernails. The king only came today, he said at last, to taunt me. The library attack, this battle, it was a way to toy with me. Us. I touched his jaw. Cold. His skin was cold, despite the warm summer night pressing on us. You are not going to die in this war, Rhysand. His attention snapped to me. I cupped his face in both hands now. Don't you listen to a word he says. He knows. He knows about us, our histories. And that scared Rhys to death. He knew the library. He picked it for what it meant to me, not just to take Nesta. So we learn where to hit him, and strike hard. Better yet, we kill him before he can do any further harm. Rhys shook his head slightly, removing his face from my hands. If it was only the king to contend with, but with a cauldron in his arsenal. And it was the way his shoulders began to curve in, the way his chin dipped ever so slightly. I grabbed his hand again. We need allies, I said, my eyes burning. We can't face the brunt of this war alone.
I know. The words were heavy, weary.
Move the meeting with the High Lord sooner. 3 days from now.
I will.
I'd never heard that tone, that quiet. And it was precisely because of it that I said, I love you. His head lifted, eyes churning.
There was a time when I dreamed of hearing that, he murmured. When I never thought I'd hear it from you.
He gestured to the tent, to Adriata beyond it.
Our trip here was the first time I let myself hope.
To the stars who listen, and the dreams that are answered. And yet today, with Tarquin. The world should know, I said. The world should know how good you are, Rhysand. How wonderful all of you are.
I can't tell if I should be worried that you're saying such nice things about me. Maybe the king's taunting did get to you.
I pinched his arm, and he let out a low laugh before raising my face to study my eyes. He angled his head.
Should I be worried?
I put a hand to his cheek once more, the silken skin now warm. You are selfless and brave and kind. You are more than I ever dreamed for myself, more than I... The words choked off and I swallowed, taking a deep breath. I wasn't sure if he needed to hear it after what the king had said, but I needed to say it. Starlight now danced in his eyes, but I went on. At this meeting with the other High Lords, what role will you play?
The usual one.
I nodded, having anticipated his answer. And the others will play their usual roles, too.
And?
I slid my hand from his face and put it over his heart. I think the time has come for us to remove the masks, to stop playing the part. He waited, hearing me out. Valaris is secret no longer. The king knows too much about us. Who we are, what we are. And if we're to ally with the other High Lords, I think they need the truth. They will need the truth in order to trust us. The truth about who you really are. Who Mor and Cassian and Azriel really are. Look at how poorly things went with Tarquin today. We can't let it continue like this. So no more masks. No more roles to play. We go as ourselves. As a family. If anything, the king's taunting had told me that. Games were over. There would be no more disguises, no more lies. Perhaps he thought it'd drive us toward continuing to do such things. But to stand a chance. Perhaps victory lay in the other direction. In honesty. With us standing together as precisely who we were. I waited for Rhys to tell me that I was young and inexperienced. That I knew nothing of politics and war. Yet Rhys only brushed his thumb over my cheek.
They may be angry at the lies we've fed them over the centuries.
Then we will make it clear that we understand their feelings, and make it clear that we had no alternative way to protect our people.
We'll show them the Court of Dreams,
he said quietly. I nodded. We'd show them. And also show Kier and Eris and Baron, show who we were to our allies and our enemies. Stars glimmered and burned out in those beautiful eyes.
And what of your powers?
The king had known of them, too, or guessed at it. I knew from his cautious tone that he'd already formed an opinion, but the choice was mine. He'd face it at my side no matter what I decided. And as I thought it through, I think they'll see the revealing of our good sides as manipulative, if it also comes out that your mate has stolen power from them all. If the king plans to use that information against us, we'll deal with that later.
Technically, that power was gifted, but
you're right. We'll have to walk a fine enough line regarding how we show ourselves.
spin it the right way so they don't think it's a trap or scheme. But when it comes to you...
Darkness blotted out the stars in his eyes. The darkness of assassins and thieves. The darkness of uncompromising death.
You could tip the scale in Hybern's favor if any of them are considering an alliance. Baron alone might try to kill you, with or without this war. I doubt even Eris could keep him from it.
I could have sworn the war camp shuddered at the power that rumbled awake, the wrath. Voices outside the tent dropped to whispers, or outright silence. But I leaned over and kissed him lightly.
"We'll deal with it," I said into his mouth. He pulled his mouth from mine, his face grave. "We keep all your powers but the ones I gave you hidden. As my high lady, you will have been expected to have received some."
I swallowed hard, nodding, and took a long drink from his goblet of water. No more lies, no more deceptions, beyond my magic. Let Tarquin be the first and last casualty of our deceit. I chewed on my lip.
"What about Miriam and Draken? Have you learned anything about where they might have gone? Along with that legion of aerial warriors?"
The question seemed to drag him from wherever he'd gone while contemplating what now lay before us. Rhys sighed, scanning those casualty lists again. The dark ink seemed to absorb the dim phalite.
"No. Az's spies have found no trace of them in any of the surrounding territories."
He rubbed his temple.
"How do you vanish an entire people?"
I frowned. I suppose Jurian's tactic to draw them out worked against him. Jurian. There hadn't been a whisper of him at the battle today.
"It would seem so."
He shook his head, the light dancing in the raven black locks of his hair.
"I should have established protocols with them centuries ago. Ways to contact them, for them to contact us if we ever needed help."
"Why didn't you?"
"They wanted to be forgotten by the world. And when I saw how peaceful Cretea became, I didn't want the world to intrude on them either."
A muscle flickered in his jaw.
"If we did somehow find them, would that be enough, though? If we can stop the wall from sundering first, I mean, our forces and Draken's, perhaps even Queen Vasa if Lucian can find her, against all of Hybern?
Against whatever gambits or spells the king still planned to unleash." Rhys was quiet for a moment.
"It might have to be."
It was the way his voice went hoarse, the way his eyes guttered, that made me press a kiss to his mouth as I laid a hand upon his chest and pushed him down upon the furs. His brows rose, but a half-smile appeared on his lips.
"There's little privacy in a war camp," he warned, some of the light coming back to his eyes.
I only straddled him, unfastening the button at the top of his dark jacket, the one below it.
"Then I suppose you'll have to be quiet," I said, working my way down the front of the jacket until it gaped open to reveal the shirt beneath.
I traced a finger of the whorl of tattoo peeking out near his neck.
"When I saw you facing the king today,"
he brushed his fingers against my thighs.
"I know. I felt you."
I tugged on the hem of his shirt, and he rose onto his elbows, helping me remove his jacket, then the shirt beneath. A bruise marred his ribs, an angry splotch.
"It's fine," he said, before I could speak. "A lucky shot."
"With what?" Again that half smile.
"A spear?"
My heart stopped.
I delicately brushed the bruise, swallowing hard. "Tipped in Faebane. My shield blocked most of it, but not enough to avoid the impact."
Dread curled in my stomach, but I leaned down and brushed a kiss over the bruise. Rhys loosed a long breath, his body seeming to settle. Calm. So I kissed the bruise again. Moved lower. He drew idle circles on my shoulder, my back. I felt his shield settle around our tent as I unbuttoned his pants, as I kissed my way across the muscled pain of his stomach. Lower.
Reese's hand slid into my hair as the rest of his clothes vanished. I stroked my hand over him once, twice, luxuriating in the feel of him. And knowing he was here, we were both here. Safe. Then, I echoed the movement with my mouth. His growls of pleasure filled the tent, drowning out the distant cries of the injured and dying. Life and death, hovering so close, whispering in our ears. But I tasted Reese, worshipped him with my hands and mouth, and then my body, and hoped that this shard of life we offered up, this undimming light between us, would drive death a bit further away. At least for another day. Only a few more Illyrians died during the night. But high up in the hills, the screams and wails of Tarquin's people rose to us on plumes of smoke from the still-burning fires Hybern had set. They continued burning when we left in the early hours after dawn, winnowing back to Valaris. Cassian and Asriel remained to lead the Illyrian legions to their new camp on our southern borders, and the former left from there to fly into the steppes, to offer his condolences to a few of those families. Nesta was waiting for us in the foyer of the townhouse, Amryn seething in a chair before the unlit fireplace of the sitting room. No sign of Elaine, but before I could ask, Nesta demanded, "What happened?" Reese glanced to me, then to Amryn, who had shot to her feet and was now watching us with the same expression as Nesta's. My mate said to my sister, "There was a battle. We won." "We know that," Amryn said, her small feet near silent on the rugs as she strode for us. "What happened with Tarquin?" Moore took a breath to say something about Varian that would likely not end well for any of us, so I cut in. "Well, he didn't try to slaughter us on sight, so things went decently?" Reese gave me a bemused look. "The royal family remains alive and well. Tarquin's armada suffered losses, but Cressida and Varian were unscathed." Something tight in Amryn's face seemed to relax at the words. His careful, diplomatic words. But Nesta was glancing between us all, her back still stiff, mouth a thin line. "Where is he?"
"Who?"
Reese crooned. "Cassian." I didn't think I'd ever heard his name from her lips. Cassian had always been him or that one. And Nesta had been pacing in the foyer, as if she was worried. I opened my mouth, but Moore beat me to it. "He's busy." I'd never heard her voice so sharp, icy. Nesta held Moore's stare. Her jaw tightened, then relaxed, then tightened, as if fighting some battle to keep questions in. Moore didn't drop her gaze. Moore had never seemed ruffled by mention of Cassian's past lovers, perhaps because they'd never meant much, not in the ways that counted. But if the Illyrian warrior no longer stood as a physical and emotional buffer between her and Asriel, and worse, if the person who caused that vacancy was Nesta. Moore said flatly, "When he gets back, keep your forked tongue behind your teeth." My heart leaped into a furious beat. My arms slack at my sides at the insult, the threat. But Reese said, "Moore?" She slowly, so slowly, looked at him. There was nothing but uncompromising will in Reese's face. "We now leave for the meeting in 3 days. Send out dispatches to the other High Lords to inform them, and I'm done debating where to meet. Pick a place and be done with it." She stared him down for a heartbeat, then dragged her gaze back to my sister. Nesta's face had not altered, the coldness limning it unbending. She was so still, she seemed to barely be breathing. But she did not balk. She did not avert her eyes from the Morrigan. Moore vanished with hardly a blink. Nesta only turned and headed for the sitting room,
where I noticed books had been laid on the low-lying table before the hearth. Amryn flowed in behind her, tossing a backward look over a shoulder at Rhys. The motion shifted her gray blouse enough that I caught the sparkle of red peeking beneath the fabric. The necklace of rubies that she wore, hidden beneath her shirt, gifted from Varian. But Rhys nodded to Amryn, and the female asked my sister, "Where were we?" Nesta sat in the armchair, holding herself tightly enough that the whites of her knuckles arced through her skin. "You were explaining how the territory lines were formed between courts." The words were distant, brittle, and... "They've also taken up history lessons?"
"I'm as shocked as you are that the house is still standing."
I swallowed my laugh, linking my arm through his and tugging him down the hall. It had been a while since I'd seen him so dirty. We both needed a bath, but there was something I had to do first. Needed to do. Behind us, Amryn murmured to Nesta,
"Cassian has gone to war many times, girl. He isn't General of Rhys's forces for nothing. This battle was a skirmish compared to what lies ahead. He's likely visiting the families of the fallen as we speak. He'll be back before the meeting."
Nesta said, "I don't care." At least she was talking again. I halted Rhys halfway down the hall. With so many listening ears in the house, I said down the bond, "Take me to the prison, right now." Rhys asked no questions. Chapter 40. I had no bone to bring with me. And though every step up that hillside and then down into the dark ripped and weighed on me, I kept moving. Kept planting one foot in front of the other. I had the feeling Rhys did the same. Standing before the bone carver 2 hours later, the ancient death god still wearing my would-be son's skin, I said, "Find another object that you desire." The carver's violet eyes flared.
"Why does the High Lord linger in the hall?"
"He has little interest in seeing you." Partially true. Rhys had wondered if the blow to his pride would work in our favor.
"You reek of blood and death."
The carver breathed in a great lungful of air, of my scent. "Pick another object than the Ouroboros," was all I said. Hyber knew about our histories, our would-be allies. There remained a shred of hope that he would not see the carver coming.
"I desire nothing else than my window to the world."
I avoided the urge to clench my hands into fists.
"I could offer you so many other things."
My voice turned low, honeyed.
"You are afraid to claim the mirror."
The bone carver angled his head.
"Why?"
"You are not afraid of it?"
"No."
A little smile. He leaned to the side.
"Are you frightened of it too, Rhysand?"
My mate didn't bother to answer from the hall, though he did come to lean against the threshold, crossing his arms. The carver sighed at the sight of him, the dirt and blood, and wrinkled his nose and said,
"Oh, I much prefer you bloodied up."
"Pick something else," I replied, "and not a fool's errand this time."
"What would you give me? Riches do me no good down here. Power holds no sway over the stone."
He chuckled.
"What about your firstborn?"
A secret smile as he gestured with that small boy's hand to himself. Rhys's attention slid to me. Surprise. Surprise, and then something deeper, more tender, flickering on his face.
"Not just any boy, then."
My cheeks heated. "No, not just any boy."
It is rude, Majesties, to speak when no one can hear you.
I sliced a glare toward the carver. There is nothing else, then. Nothing else that won't break me if I so much as look upon it?
Bring me the Ouroboros, and I am yours. You have my word.
I weighed the beatific expression on the carver's face before I strode out.
Where is my bone?
The demand cracked through the gloom. I kept walking, but Rhys chucked something at him.
From lunch.
The carver's hiss of outrage as a chicken bone skittered over the floor followed us out. In silence, we began the trek up through the prison. The mirror. I'd have to find some way to get it. After the meeting, just in case it did indeed destroy me. What does he look like? The question was soft, tentative. I knew who he meant. I interlaced my fingers through Rhys's and squeezed tightly. Let me show you. And as we walked through the darkness, toward that distant, still hidden light, I did. We were starving by the time we returned to the townhouse, and since neither of us felt like waiting for food to be prepared, Rhys and I headed right for the kitchen, passing by Amarin and Nesta with little more than a wave. My mouth was already watering as Rhys shouldered open the swinging door into the kitchen. But we beheld what was within, and halted. Elaine stood between Nuala and Caradwyn at the long work table, all three of them covered in flour, some sort of doughy mess on the surface before them. The two handmaiden spies instantly bowed to Rhys, and Elaine. There was a slight sparkle in her brown eyes, as if she'd been enjoying herself with them. Nuala swallowed hard.
The lady said she was hungry, so we went to make her something, but she said she wanted to learn how, so...
Hands wreathed in shadows lifted in a helpless gesture, flour drifting off them like veils of snow.
We're making bread.
Elaine was glancing between all of us, and as her eyes began to shudder, I gave her a broad smile and said, I hope it'll be done soon. I'm starved. Elaine offered a faint smile in return and nodded. She was hungry. She was doing something, learning something.
We're going to bathe, I announced, even as my stomach grumbled.
We'll leave you to your baking. I tugged Rhys into the hall before they'd finished saying goodbye, the kitchen door swinging shut behind us. I put a hand on my chest, leaning against the wood panels of the stair wall. Rhys's hand covered my own a heartbeat later.
That was what I felt, he said. When I saw you smile that night we dined along the Sidra.
I leaned forward, resting my brow against his chest, right over his heart. She still has a long way to go.
We all do.
He stroked a hand over my back. I leaned into the touch, savoring his warmth and strength. For long minutes we stood there, until I said, Let's go find somewhere to eat. Outside. He showed no sign of letting go. I looked up at last, found his eyes shining with that familiar wicked light.
I think I'm hungry for something else, he purred.
My toes curled in my boots, but I lifted my brows and said coolly, Oh? Rhys snipped at my earlobe, then whispered in my ear as he winnowed us up to our bedroom, where two plates of food now waited on the desk.
I owe you for last night, mate.
He gave me the courtesy, at least, of letting me pick what he consumed first. Me? Or the food?
I picked wisely.
Nesta was waiting at the breakfast table the next morning. Not for me, I realized, as her gaze slipped over me as if I were no more than a servant, but for someone else. I kept my mouth shut, not bothering to tell her Cassian was still up at the war camps. If she wouldn't ask, I wasn't getting in the middle of it.
Not when Amryn claimed that my sister was close, so close to grasping whatever skill was involved in potentially patching up the wall. If she would only unleash herself, Amryn said. I didn't dare suggest that perhaps the world wasn't quite ready for that. I ate my breakfast in silence, my fork scraping across the plate. Amryn said she was close to finding what we needed in the book, too. Whatever spell my sister would wield. How Amryn knew, I had no idea. It didn't seem wise to ask. Nesta only spoke when I rose to my feet. You're going to that meeting in 2 days. Yes. I braced myself for whatever she intended to say. Nesta glanced toward the front windows, as if still waiting, still watching. You went off into battle, without a second thought. Why? Because I had to. Because people needed help. Her blue-gray eyes were near silver in the trickle of morning light. But Nesta said nothing else. And after waiting for another moment, I left, winnowing up to the house for my flying lesson with Azriel. Chapter 41. The next 2 days were so busy that the lesson with Azriel was the only time I trained with him. The spymaster had returned from dispatching the messages Moore had written about the meeting moving up. They'd agreed on the date, at least. But Moore's declaration of the spot, despite her unyielding language, had been universally rejected. Thus continued the endless back and forth between courts. Under the Mountain had once been their neutral meeting place. Even if it hadn't been sealed, no one was inclined to meet there now. So the debate raged about who would host the gathering of all the High Lords. Well, six of them. Baron, at last, had deigned to join, but no word had come from the Spring Court, though we knew the messages had been received. All of us would go, save Amryn and Nesta, who the former insisted needed to practice more. Especially when Amryn had found a passage in the book last night that might be what we needed to fix the wall. With only hours to spare the evening before, it was finally agreed that the meeting place would take place in the Dawn Court. It was close enough to the middle of the land, and since Kalias, High Lord of Winter, would not allow anyone into his territory after the horrors Amarantha had wrought upon its people, it was the only other area flanking that neutral middle land. Rhys and Theson, High Lord of the Dawn Court, were on decent terms. Dawn was mostly neutral in any conflict, but as one of the three solar courts, their allegiance always leaned toward each other. Not as strong an ally as Helion Spellcleaver in the Day Court, but strong enough. It didn't stop Rhys, Moore, and Azriel from gathering around the dining table at the townhouse the night before to go over every kernel of information they'd learned about Theson's palace, about possible pitfalls and traps, and escape routes. It was an effort not to pace, not to ask if perhaps the risks outweighed the benefits. So much had gone wrong in Highburn. So much was going wrong throughout the world. Every time Azriel spoke, I heard his roar of pain as that bolt went through his chest. Every time Moore countered an argument, I saw her pale-faced and backing away from the king. Every time Rhys asked for my opinion, I saw him kneeling in his friend's blood, begging the king not to sever our bond. Nesta and Amryn paused their practicing in the sitting room every so often so that the latter could chime in with some bit of advice or warning regarding the meeting, or so that Amryn could snap at Nesta to concentrate, to push harder, while she herself combed through the book. A few more days, Amryn declared when Nesta at last went upstairs complaining of a headache. A few more days, and my sister, through whatever mysterious power, might be able to do something. That is, Amryn added, if she could crack that promising section of the book in time. And with that, the dark-haired female bid us goodnight, to go read until her eyes were bleeding, she claimed. Considering how awful the book was, I wasn't entirely sure if she was joking. The others weren't either. I barely touched my dinner, and I barely slept that night,
twisting in the sheets until Rhys woke and patiently listened to me murmur my fears until they were nothing but shadows. Dawn broke, and as I dressed, the morning unfurled into a sunny, dry day. Though we would be going to the meeting as we truly were, our usual attire remained the same. Rhys in his preferred black jacket and pants, Azriel and Cassian in their Illyrian armor, all seven siphons polished and gleaming. Mor had foregone her usual red gown for one of midnight blue. It was cut with the same revealing panels and flowing gauzy skirts, but there was something restrained in it. Regal, a princess of the realm. The usual attire, except my own. I hadn't found a new gown, for there was no other gown that could top the one I now wore as I stood in the foyer while the clock on the sitting room mantel struck 11. Rhys hadn't yet come downstairs, and there was no sign of Amryn or Nesta to see us off. We'd gathered a few minutes earlier, but I looked down at myself again. Even in the warm phalite of the foyer, the gown glittered and gleamed like a fresh-cut jewel. We'd taken my gown from Starfall and refashioned it, adding sheer silk panels to the back shoulders, the glittering material like woven starlight as it flowed behind me in lieu of a veil or cape. If Rhysand was night triumphant, I was the star that only glowed thanks to his darkness, the light only visible because of him. I scowled up the stairs. That is, if he bothered to show up on time. My hair Nuala had swept into an ornate, elegant arc across my head, and in front of it, I caught Cassian glancing at me for the third time in less than a minute and demanded, "What?" His lips twitched at the corners.
"You just look so..."
"Here we go," Mor muttered from where she picked at her red-tinted nails against the stair banister. Rings glinted at every knuckle, on every finger. Stacks of bracelets tinkled against each other on either wrist.
"Official,"
Cassian said with an incredulous look in her direction. He waved a siphon-topped hand to me.
"Fancy."
"Over 500 years old," Mor said, shaking her head sadly. "A skilled warrior and general, famous throughout territories, and complimenting ladies is still something he finds next to impossible. Remind me why we bring you on diplomatic meetings?" Azriel, wreathed in shadows by the front door, chuckled quietly. Cassian shot him a glare.
"I don't see you spouting poetry, brother."
Azriel crossed his arms, still smiling faintly.
"I don't need to resort to it."
Mor let out a crow of laughter, and I snorted, earning a jab in the ribs from Cassian. I batted his hand away, but refrained from the shove I wanted to give him, only because it was the first I'd seen of him since Adriata, and shadows still dimmed his eyes, and because of the precarious feeling thing atop my head. The crown. Rhys had crowned me at each and every meeting and function we'd had, long before I was his mate, long before I was his high lady, even under the mountain. I'd never questioned the tiaras and diadems and crowns that Nuala or Caradwyn wove into my hair, never objected to them, even before things between us had been this way. But this one. I peered up the stairs as Rhys's strolling, unhurried footsteps thudded on the carpet. This crown was heavier. Not unwelcome, but strange. And as Rhys appeared at the top of the stairs, resplendent in that black jacket, his wings out and gleaming as if he'd polished them, I was again in that room he'd brought me to late last night, after I'd awoken him with my thrashing and twisting in bed. It was contained a level above the library in the House of Wind, and warded with so many spells that it had taken him a few moments to work through them. Only he and I, and any future offspring, he added with a soft smile, were able to enter, unless we brought guests. The chamber was a cool, chill black, as if we'd stepped inside the mind of some sleeping beast. And within its round space gleamed glittering islands of light, of jewels, 10,000 years worth of treasure. It was neatly organized in podiums and open drawers and busts and racks.
"The family jewels," Rhys said with a devious grin. "Some of the pieces we don't like are kept at the Court of Nightmares, just so they don't get pissy, and because we sometimes loan them to Moore's family, but these are for the family."
He led me past displays that sparkled like small constellations, the worth of each. Even as a merchant's daughter, I could not calculate the worth of any of it. And toward the back of the chamber, shrouded in a heavier darkness, I'd heard of catacombs on the continent, where skulls of beloved or infamous people were kept in little alcoves, dozens or hundreds of them to a wall. The concept here was the same. Carved into the rock was an entire wall of crowns. They each had their own resting place, lined with black velvet, each illuminated by glowworms, Rhys told me, as the tiny bluish globs crusted in the arches of each nook seemed to glitter like the entire night sky. In fact, what I'd taken for small fae lights in the ceiling above, it was all glowworms. Pale blue and turquoise, their light as silken as moonlight, illuminating the jewels with their ancient, silent fire.
"Pick one," Rhys whispered in my ear.
"A glowworm?" He nipped at my earlobe.
"Smartass."
He steered me back toward the wall of crowns, each wholly different, as individual as skulls.
"Pick whichever crown you like."
"I can't just take one."
"You most certainly can. They belong to you."
I lifted a brow.
"They don't."
"Not really."
"By law and tradition, this is all yours. Sell it, melt it, wear them. Do whatever you want."
"You don't care about it?" I gestured to the trove worth more than most kingdoms.
"Oh, I have favorite pieces that I might convince you to spare, but this is yours. Every last piece of it."
Our eyes met, and I knew he too recalled the words that I'd whispered to him months ago, that every piece of my still healing heart belonged to him. I smiled and brushed a hand down his arm before approaching the wall of crowns. I'd been terrified once, in Tamlin's court, of being given a crown, had dreaded it, and I supposed that I indeed had never fretted over it when it came to Rhys, as if some small part of me had always known that this was where I was meant to be, at his side as his equal, his queen. Rhys inclined his head as if to say, yes. He saw and understood, and had always known. Now, striding down the townhouse stairs, Rhys's attention went right to that crown atop my head, and the emotion that rippled across his face was enough to make even Moore and Cassian look away. I'd let the crown call to me. I hadn't picked it for style or comfort, but for the draw I felt to it, as if it were that ring in the weaver's cottage. My crown was crafted of silver and diamond, all fashioned into swirls of stars and various phases of the moon. Its arching apex held aloft a crescent moon of solid diamond, flanked by two exploding stars, and with the glittering dress from Starfall. Rhys stepped off the stairs and took my hand. Night triumphant, and the stars eternal. If he was the sweet, terrifying darkness, I was the glittering light that only his shadows could make clear.
"I thought you were leaving,"
Nesta's voice cut in from atop the stairs. I braced myself, dragging my attention away from Rhys. Nesta was in a gown of darkest blue. No jewelry to be seen. Her hair swept up and unadorned as well. I supposed that with her stunning beauty, she needed no ornamentation. It would have been like putting jewelry on a lion. But for her to be dressed like that. She strode down the stairs, and when the others were silent, I realized. I tried not to look too obvious as I glanced at Cassian. They hadn't seen each other since Adriata. But the warrior only gave her a cursory once-over and turned toward Asriel to say something. Moore was watching both carefully, the warning she'd given my sister ringing silently between them. And Nesta, mother damn it all, seemed to remember. Seemed to rein in whatever words she'd been about to spit, and just approached me. And nearly made my heart stop dead with shock as she said, "You look beautiful." I blinked at her. Moore said, "That, Cassian, was what you were attempting to say." He grumbled something we chose not to hear. I said to Nesta, "Thank you. You do as well." Nesta only shrugged. I pushed, "Why are you dressed so nicely? Shouldn't you be practicing with Amarin?" I felt Cassian's attention slide to us. Felt them all look as Nesta said, "I'm going with you." Chapter 42. No one said anything. Nesta only lifted her chin. I'd never seen her stumble for words. "I do not want to be remembered as a coward." "No one would say that," I offered quietly. "I would." Nesta surveyed us all, her gaze jumping past Cassian. Not to slight him, but avoid answering the look he was giving her. Approval, more. "It was some distant thing," she said. "War. Battle. It's not anymore. I will help if I can. If it means telling them what happened." "You've given enough," I said, my dress rustling as I braved a solitary step toward her. "Amarin claimed you were close to mastering whatever skill you need. You should stay, focus on that." "No." The word was steady, clear. "A day or two delay with my training won't make any difference. Perhaps by the time we return, Amarin will have decoded that spell in the book." She shrugged with a shoulder. "You went off to battle for a court you barely know, who barely see you as friends. Amarin showed me the blood ruby, and when I asked you why, you said because it was the right thing. People needed your help." Her throat bobbed. "No one is going to fight to save the humans beneath the wall. No one cares, but I do." She toyed with a fold in her dress. "I do." Rhys stepped up to my side.
"As High Lady, Feyre is no longer my emissary to the human world."
He gave Nesta a tentative smile.
"Want the job?"
Nesta's face yielded nothing, but I could have sworn some spark flared.
"Consider this meeting a trial basis, and I'll make you pay through the teeth for my services."
Rhys sketched a bow.
"I would expect nothing less of an Archeron sister."
I poked him in the ribs, and he huffed a laugh.
"Welcome to the court," he said to her. "You're about to have one hell of a first day."
And to my eternal shock, a smile tugged at Nesta's mouth.
"No going back now,"
Cassian said to Rhys, gesturing to his wings. Rhys slid his hands into his pockets.
"I figure it's time for the world to know who really has the largest wingspan."
Cassian laughed, and even Asriel smiled. Moore gave me a look that had me biting my lip to keep from howling.
20 gold, Mark, says there's a fight in the first hour,"
Cassian said, still not really looking at Nesta.
30, and I say,
within 45 minutes, Moore said, crossing her arms.
You do remember there are vows and wards of neutrality,
Rhys said mildly.
You lot don't need fists or magic to fight, Moore chirped.
Asriel said from the door,
50, and I say within 30 minutes, started by autumn.
Rhys rolled his eyes.
Try not to look like you're all gambling on them, and no cheating by provoking fights.
Their answering grins were anything but reassuring. Rhys sighed.
100 marks on a fight within 15 minutes.
Nesta let out a soft snort, but they all looked to me, waiting. I shrugged.
Rhys and I are a team. He can gamble away our money on this bullshit.
They all looked deeply offended. Rhys looped his elbow through mine.
A queen in appearance.
Don't even finish that, I said.
He laughed.
Shall we?
He'd winnow me in. Moore would now take Cassian and Nesta, and Asriel would carry himself. Rhys glanced toward the sitting room clock and gave the Shadow Singer a nod. Asriel instantly vanished. First to arrive, first to see if any trap awaited. In silence, we waited. 1 minute, 2. Then Rhys blew out a breath and said, clear. He threaded his fingers through mine, gripping tightly. Moore sagged a bit, jewelry glinting with the movement, and went to take Cassian's arm. But he'd at last approached Nesta, and as the world began to turn to shadows and wind, I saw Cassian tower over my sister, saw her chin lift defiantly, and heard him growl,
hello, Nesta.
Rhys seemed to halt his winnowing as my sister said, so you're alive. Cassian bared his teeth in a feral grin, wings flaring slightly.
Were you hoping otherwise?
Moore was watching, watching so closely, every muscle tense. She again reached for his arm, but Cassian angled out of reach, not tearing his eyes from Nesta's blazing gaze. Nesta blurted, you didn't come to... She stopped herself. The world seemed to go utterly still at that interrupted sentence. Nothing and no one more so than Cassian. He scanned her face as if furiously reading some battle report. Moore just watched, as Cassian took Nesta's slim hand in his own, interlacing their fingers. As he folded in his wings and blindly reached his other hand back toward Moore in a silent order to transport them. Cassian's eyes did not leave Nesta's, nor did hers leave his. There was no warmth, no tenderness on either of their faces. Only that raging intensity, that blend of contempt and understanding and fire. Rhys began to winnow us again, and just as the dark wind swept in, I heard Cassian say to Nesta, his voice low and rough,
the next time, emissary, I'll come say hello.
I'd learned enough from Rhys about what to expect of the Dawn Court, but even the vistas he'd painted for me didn't do the sight justice. It was the clouds I saw first. Enormous clouds, drifting in the cobalt sky, soft and magnanimous, still tinged by the rose remnants of sunrise, their rounded edges gilded with the golden light. The dewy freshness of morning lingered in the balmy air as we peered up at the mountain palace spiraling into the heavens above. If the palace above the Court of Nightmares had been crafted of moonstone, this was made from sunstone. I didn't have a word for the near opalescent golden stone that seemed to hold the gleaming of 1,000 sunrises within it. Steps and balconies and archways and verandas and bridges linked the towers and gilded domes of the palace. Periwinkle morning glories climbing the pillars and neatly cut blocks of stone to drink in the gilded mists wafting by. Wafting by, because the mountain on which the palace stood. There was a reason
I beheld the clouds first. The veranda that we'd appeared on was empty, save for Azrael and a slim-hipped attendant in the gold and ruby livery of dawn. Light, loose robes, layered and yet flattering. The male bowed, his brown skin smooth with youth and beauty.
This way, High Lord.
Even his voice was as lovely as the first glimmer of gold on the horizon. Rhys returned his bow with a shallow nod and offered his arm to me. Moore muttered behind us, falling into rank with Nesta at her side.
If you ever feel like building a new house, Rhys, let's use this one for inspiration.
Rhys threw her an incredulous look over a shoulder. Cassian and Azrael snorted softly. I glanced to Nesta as the attendants led us not to the archway beyond the veranda, but the spiral stairs climbing upward, along the bare face of a tower. Nesta seemed as out of place as all of us, save Moore, but that was awe on my sister's face. Utter awe at the castle in the clouds, at the verdant countryside rippling away far below, speckled with red-roofed little villages and broad, sparkling rivers. A lush, eternal countryside, rich with the weight of summer upon it. And I wondered if my face had appeared like that, the day I'd first seen Valaris. The mix of awe and anger and the realization that the world was large and beautiful, and sometimes so overwhelming in its wonder that it was impossible to drink it down all at once. There were other palaces within Dawn's territory, set in small cities that specialized in tinkering and clockwork and clever things. Here, beyond those little villages nestled in the country hills, there was no industry, nothing beyond the palace and the sky and the clouds. We ascended the spiral stairs, the drop-off, the two near edge, falling away into warm-colored rock, peppered with clusters of pale roses and fluffy magenta peonies. A beautiful, colorful death. Every step had me bracing myself as we wound up and up the tower, Rhys's grip on my hand unwavering. The wings remained out. He did not falter a single step. His eyes slid to mine, amused and questioning. He said down the bond, "And do you think I need to redecorate our home?" We passed open-air chambers full of fat silk pillows and plush carpets, past windows whose panes were arranged in colorful medleys, past urns overflowing with lavender, and fountains gurgling clearest water under the mild rays of the sun.
"It's not a competition," I trilled to him.
His hand tightened on mine.
"Well, even if Theisen has a prettier palace, I'm the only one blessed with a high lady at my side."
I couldn't help my blush, especially as Rhys added,
"Tonight, I want you to wear that crown to bed. Only the crown."
"Scoundrel."
"Always."
I smiled, and he leaned in smoothly to brush a kiss to my cheek. Moore muttered a plea for mercy from mates. Muted voices reached us from the open-air chamber atop the sunstone tower. Some deep, some sharp, some lilting, before we finished the last rotation around it, the arched, glassless windows offering no barrier to the conversation within.
"Three others are here already,"
Rhys warned me, and I had the feeling that was what Azrael was now murmuring to Moore and Cassian.
"Helion, Callias, and Theisen.
The High Lords of Day, Winter, and our host, Dawn. Meaning Autumn and Summer, Baron and Tarquin, had not arrived yet. Or Spring." I still doubted Tamlin would come at all, but Baron and Tarquin. Perhaps the battle had changed Tarquin's mind, and Baron was awful enough to perhaps have sided with Highburn already, regardless of Eris's manipulating. I caught the bob of Rhys's throat as we cleared the final steps to the open doorway. A long bridge connected the other half of the tower to the palace interior, its rails drooping with dawn-pale wisteria.
I wondered if the others had been led up these stairs, or if it was somehow meant to be an insult.
"Shields up?"
Rhys asked. But I knew he was aware mine had been raised since Phalaris. Just as I was aware that he'd put a shield, mental and physical, around all of us. Terms of peace or no. And though his face was calm, his shoulders thrown back, I said, "I see all of you, Rhys, and there is not one part that I do not love with everything that I am." His hand squeezed mine in answer before he laid my fingers on his arm, raising it enough that we must have painted a rather courtly portrait as we entered the chamber. "You bow to no one," was all he replied. Chapter 43. The chamber was and was not what I expected. Deep cushioned oak chairs had been arranged in a massive circle in the heart of the room, enough for all the High Lords and their delegates. Some, I realized, had been shaped to accommodate wings. It seemed it was not unusual, for clustered around a beautiful, slender male who I immediately remembered from under the mountain were winged fae. If the Illyrians had bat-like wings, these, they were like birds.
"The Peregrines are distantly related to Dracon's Seraphim people, and provide Theseon with a small aerial legion," Rhys said to me of the muscular, golden-armored males and females gathered. "The male on his left is his captain and lover."
Indeed, the handsome male stood just a tad closer to his High Lord, one hand on the fine sword at his side.
"No mating bond yet,"
Rhys went on.
"But I think Theseon didn't dare acknowledge it while Amarantha reigned. She delighted in ripping out their feathers, one by one. She made a dress out of them once."
I tried not to wince as we stepped onto the polished marble floor, the stone warmed with the sun streaming through the open archways. The others had looked toward us, some murmuring at the sight of Rhys's wings, but my attention went to the true gem of the chamber, the reflection pool. Rather than a table occupying the space between that circle of chairs, a shallow circular reflection pool was carved into the floor itself. Its dark water was laden with pink and gold water lilies, the pads broad and flat as a male's hand, and beneath them, pumpkin and ivory fish lazily swam about. "This," I admitted to Rhys, "I might need to have." A wry pulse of humor down the bond.
"I'll make a note of it for your birthday."
More wisteria twined about the pillars flanking the space, and along the tables set against the few walls, bunches of wine-colored peonies unfurled their silken layers. Between the vases, platters and baskets of food had been laid. Small pastries, cured meats, and garlands of fruit beckoned before sweating pewter ewers of some refreshment. Then there were the three High Lords themselves. We were not the only ones to have dressed well. Rhys and I halted halfway through the space. I knew them all, remembered them from those months under the mountain. Rhys had taught me their histories while we'd trained. I wondered if they sensed their power within me, as their attention slid between us. Theseon glided forward, his embroidered, exquisite shoes silent on the floor. His tunic was tight-fitting through his slender chest, but flowing pants, much like those Amran favored, whispered with movement as he approached. His brown skin and hair were kissed with gold, as if the sunrise had permanently gilded them. But his upswept eyes, the rich brown of freshly tilled fields, were his loveliest feature. He paused a few feet away, taking in Rhys and me, our entourage, the wings that Rhys kept folded behind him.
"Welcome,"
Theseon said, his voice as deep and rich as those eyes. His lover monitored our every breath from a few feet behind, no doubt realizing our own companions were doing the same behind us.
"Or," Theseon mused, "since you've called this meeting,
Perhaps you should be doing the welcoming?
A faint smile ghosted Reese's perfect face, shadows twining between the strands of his hair.
He'd loosened the damper on his power, just a bit.
They all had.
I may have requested the meeting, Thiessen, but you were the one gracious enough to offer up your beautiful residence.
Thiessen gave a nod of thanks, perhaps deeming it impolite to inquire about Rhysand's newly revealed wings, then turned to me. We stared at each other while my companions bowed behind me, as a High Lord's wife should have done with them. Yet I simply stood and stared. Rhys did not interfere. Not at this first test. Dawn. The gift of healing. It was his gift that had allowed me to save Rhysand's life, that had sent me to the Suriel that day I had learned the truth that would alter my eternity. I offered Thiessen a restrained smile. Your home is lovely. But Thiessen's attention had gone to the tattoo. I knew he realized it the moment he noticed the ink covered the wrong hand. Then, the crown atop my head. His brows flicked up. Rhys only shrugged. The other two High Lords had approached now.
Kalias, Rhys said to the white-haired one, whose skin was so pale it looked frozen.
Even his crushing blue eyes seemed like chips hewn from a glacier as he studied Rhys's wings and seemed to instantly dismiss them. He wore a jacket of royal blue, embroidered with silver thread, its collar and sleeves dusted with white rabbit fur. I would have thought it too warm for the mild day, especially the fur-lined knee-high brown boots, but given the utter iciness of his expression, perhaps his blood ran frozen. A trio of similarly colored High Fae remained in their seats, one of them a stunning young female who looked right at Moore, and grinned.
Moore returned the beam, hopping from one foot to another as Kalias opened his mouth.
And then my friend squealed. Squealed! Both females hurtled for each other, and Moore's squeal had turned to a quiet sob as she flung her arms around the slender stranger and hugged her tight. The female's own arms were shaking as she gripped Moore. Then they were laughing and crying and dancing around each other, pausing to study each other's faces, to wipe away tears, and then embracing again.
You look the same, the stranger was saying, beaming from ear to ear. I think that's the same dress I saw you in. You look the same, wearing fur in the middle of summer. How utterly typical. You brought the usual suspects, it seems. Thankfully, the company has been improved by some new arrivals.
Moore waved me over. It had been ages since I'd seen her shining so brightly.
Vivian, meet Feyre. Feyre, meet Vivian, Kalias's wife.
I glanced at Thiessen and Kalias, the latter of whom watched his wife and Moore with raised brows.
I tried to suggest she stay at home,
Kalias said dryly.
But she threatened to freeze my balls off.
Rhys let out a dark chuckle.
Sounds familiar.
I threw him a glare over a sparkling shoulder, just in time to see the smirk fade from Kalias's face as he truly took in Rhys. Not just the wings this time. My mate's own amusement dimmed, some thread of tension going taut between him and Kalias. But I'd reached Moore and Vivian, and wiped the curiosity from my face as I shook the female's hand, surprised to find it warm. Her silver hair glittered in the sun like fresh snow.
Wife, Vivian said, clicking her tongue. You know, it still sounds strange to me. Every time someone says it, I keep looking over my shoulder as if it'll be someone else.
Kalias said to none of us in particular, from where he remained facing Rhys, stiff-backed.
I have yet to decide if I find it insulting, since she says it every day.
Vivian stuck out her tongue at him. But Moore gripped her shoulder and squeezed.
It's about time.
A blush stained Vivian's pale face.
Yes, well,
Everything was different under the mountain.
Her sapphire eyes slid to mine, and she bowed her head.
Thank you for returning my mate to me.
Mates?
Moore fizzed, glancing between them.
Married and mates?
You two do realize that this is a serious meeting,
Reese said.
And that the fish in the pool are very sensitive to high-pitched sounds,
Callias added.
Vivian gave both a vulgar gesture that made me instantly like her.
Reese looked to Callias with what I assumed was some sort of long-suffering male expression, but the High Lord did not return it. He only stared at Reese, amusement again gone, that coldness settling in across his face. There had been tension with the Winter Court, Moore had explained when they'd rescued Lucian and me on the ice, a lingering anger over something that had occurred under the mountain. But the third High Lord had at last approached from across the pool.
My father had once bought and traded a gold and lapis lazuli pendant that hailed from the ruins of an arid southeastern kingdom, where the Fae had ruled as gods amid swaying date palms and sand-swept palaces.
I'd been mesmerized by the colors, the artistry, but more interested in the shipment of myrrh and figs that had come with it. A few of the latter my father had snuck to me while I loitered in his office. Even now, I could still taste their sweetness on my tongue, still smell that earthy scent, and I couldn't quite explain why, but I remembered that ancient necklace and those exquisite delicacies as he prowled toward us. His clothes had been formed from a single bolt of white fabric. Not a robe, not a dress, but rather something in between, pleated and draped over his muscular body. A golden cuff of an upright serpent encircled one powerful bicep, offsetting his near glowing dark skin, and a radiant crown of golden spikes. The rays of the sun, I realized, glistened atop his onyx hair. The sun personified. Powerful, lazy with grace, capable of kindness and wrath. Nearly as beautiful as Rhysand. And somehow, colder than Callias. His high fey entourage was almost as large as ours, clad in similar robes of varying rich dyes, cobalt and crimson and amethyst. Some with expertly coal-lined eyes, all of them fit and gleaming with health. But perhaps the physical power of them, of him, was the sleight of hand. For Helion's other title was Spell Cleaver, and his 1,000 libraries were rumored to contain the knowledge of the world. Perhaps all that knowledge had made him too aware, too cold behind those bright eyes. Or perhaps that had come after Amarantha had looted some of those libraries for herself. I wondered if he'd reclaimed what she'd taken, or if he mourned what she'd burned. Even Moore and Vivian halted their reunion as Helion stopped a wise distance away. It was his power that had gotten my friends out of Highburn. His power that made me glow whenever Reese and I were tangled in each other and every heartbeat ached with mirth. Helion jerked his square chin to Reese, the only one of them, it seemed, not surprised by my mate's wings. But his eyes, a striking amber, fell on me.
Does Tamlin know what she is?
His voice was indeed colder than Callias's, and the question, so carefully worded. Reese drawled,
If you mean beautiful and clever, then yes. I think he does.
Helion leveled a flat look at him.
Does he know she is your mate and High Lady?
High Lady?
Vivian squeaked, but Moore shushed her, drawing her away to whisper. Theson and Callias took me in, slowly. Cassian and Azrael casually slid closer, no more than a night breeze.
If he arrives, Reese said smoothly, I suppose we'll find out.
Helion let out a dark laugh. Dangerous. He was utterly lethal, this High Lord kissed by the sun.
I always liked you, Rhysand.
Theseus stepped forward, ever the good host, for that laugh indeed promised violence. His lover and the other peregrines seemed to shift into defensive positions, either to guard their High Lord or simply to remind us that we were guests in their home. But Helion's attention snagged on Nesta, lingered. She only stared right back at him, unruffled, unimpressed.
Who is your guest?
The High Lord of Day asked a bit too quietly for my liking. Cassian revealed nothing, not even a glimmer that he knew Nesta. But he didn't move an inch from his casual defensive position. Neither did Asriel. She is my sister, and our emissary to the human lands, I said at last to him, stepping to her side. And she will tell her story when the others are here.
She is Fae.
No shit, Vivian muttered under her breath, and Moore's snort was cut off as Calais raised his brows at them. Helion ignored them.
Who made her?
Theseus asked politely, angling his head. Nesta surveyed Theseus, then Helion, then Calais. Highburn did, she said simply. Not a flicker of fear in her eyes, in her upraised chin. Stunned silence. But I'd had enough of my sister being ogled. I linked elbows with her, heading toward the low-backed chairs that I assumed were for us. They threw her in the cauldron, I said, along with my other sister, Elaine. I sat, placing Nesta beside me, and gazed at the three assembled High Lords without an inch of manners or niceness or flattery. After the High Priestess Ianthe and Tamlin sold out Prithian and my family to them. Nesta nodded her silent confirmation. Helion's eyes blazed like a forge.
That is a heavy accusation to make, especially of your former lover.
It is no accusation, I said, folding my hands in my lap. We were all there, and now we're going to do something about it. Pride flickered down the bond. And then, Vivian muttered to Calais, jabbing him in the ribs. Why can't I be High Lady as well? The others arrived late. We took our seats around the reflection pool, Theseus's impeccably mannered attendants bringing us plates of food and goblets of exotic juices from the tables against the wall. Conversation halted and flowed, Moore and Vivian sitting next to each other to catch up on what seemed like 50 years' worth of gossip. Vivian had not been under the mountain. As her childhood friend, Calais had been protective of her to a fault over the years, had placed the sharp-minded female on border duty for decades to avoid the scheming of his court. He didn't let her near Amarantha either, didn't let anyone get a whiff of what he felt for his white-haired friend, who had no clue, not one, that he had loved her his entire life. And in those last moments, when his power had been ripped from him by that spell, Calais had flung out the remnants to warn her, to tell Vivian he loved her, and then he begged her to protect their people. So she had. As Moore and my friends had protected Valaris, Vivian had veiled and guarded the small city under her watch, offering safe harbor to those who made it. Never forgetting the High Lord and friend trapped under the mountain, never ceasing her hunt for finding a way to free him. Especially while Amarantha unleashed her horrors upon his court to break them, punish them. Yet Vivian held them together. And through that reign of terror, during all those years, she realized what Calais was to her, what she felt for him in return. The day he'd returned home, he'd winnowed right to her. She'd kissed him before he could speak a word. He'd then knelt down and asked her to be his wife. They went an hour later to a temple and swore their vows, and that night, during the, you know. Vivian grinned at Moore. The mating bond had at last snapped into place. The story occupied our time while we waited, since Moore wanted details, lots of them, ones that pushed the boundaries of propriety and left Thiessen choking on his elderberry wine. But Kalia smiled at his wife and mate, warm and bright enough that despite his icy coloring, he should have been the High Lord of Day. Not the sharp-tongued, brutal Helion, who watched my sister and me like an eagle. A great golden eagle, with very sharp talons. I wondered what his beast form was, if he grew wings like Rhysand, and claws. If Thiessen did too, white wings, like the watchful Peregrines who kept silent, his own fierce-eyed lover not uttering a word to anyone. Perhaps the High Lords of the Solar Courts all possessed wings beneath their skin, a gift from the skies that their courts claimed ownership of. It was an hour before Thiessen announced, "Tarquin is here." My mouth went dry. An uncomfortable silence spread.
"Heard about the blood rubies?"
Helion smirked at Rhys, toying with the golden cuff on his bicep.
"That is a story I want you to tell."
Rhys waved an idle hand.
"All in good time."
"Prick," he said to me with a wink. But then Tarquin cleared the top step into the chamber, Varian and Cressida flanking him. Varian glanced among us for someone who was not there, and glowered when he beheld Cassian, seated to Nesta's left. Cassian just gave him a cocky grin.
"I wrecked one building,"
Cassian had said once of his last visit to the summer court, where he was now banned. Apparently, even assisting them in battle hadn't lifted it. Tarquin ignored Rhysand and me, ignored all of us, Rhys's wings included, as he made vague apologies for the tardiness, blaming it on the attack. Possibly true. Or he'd been deciding until the last minute whether to come, despite his acceptance of the invitation. He and Helion were nearly as tense, and only Thiessen seemed to be on decent terms with him. Neutral indeed. Kalias had become even colder, distant. But the introductions were done, and then an attendant whispered to Thiessen that Baron and all of his sons had arrived. The smile instantly vanished from Moore's mouth, her eyes, from my own as well. The violence simmering off my friends was enough to boil the pool at our toes as the High Lord of Autumn filed through the archway, his sons in rank behind him, his wife, Lucian's mother, at his side. Her russet eyes scanned the room, as if looking for that missing son. They settled instead on Helion, who gave her a mocking incline of his dark head. She quickly averted her gaze. She had saved my life once, under the mountain, in exchange for my sparing Lucian's. Did she wonder where her lost son was now? Had she heard the rumors I'd crafted? The lies I'd spun? I couldn't tell her that Lucian currently hunted the continent, dodging armies for an enchanted queen, to find a scrap of salvation. Baron, slender-faced and brown-haired, didn't bother to look anywhere but at the High Lords assembled. But his remaining sons sneered at us, sneered enough that the Peregrines ruffled their feathers. Even Varian flashed his teeth in warning at the leer Cressida earned from one of them. Their father didn't bother to check them, but Aerys did. A step behind his father, Aerys murmured, "Enough." And his younger brothers fell into line, all three of them. Whether Baron noticed or cared, he did not let on. No, he merely stopped halfway across the room, hands folded before him, and scowled, as if we were a pack of mongrels. Baron, the oldest among us, the most awful. Rhys smoothly greeted him, though his power was a dark mountain shuddering beneath us.
"It's no surprise that you're tardy,"
Given that your own sons were too slow to catch my mate, I suppose it runs in the family.
Baron's lips curled slightly as he looked to me, my crown.
Mate and high lady.
I leveled a flat, bored stare at him, turned it on his hateful sons, on Eris. Eris only smiled at me, amused and aloof. Would he wear that mask when he ended his father's life and stole his throne? Cassian was watching the would-be High Lord like a hawk studying his next meal. Eris deigned a glance at the Illyrian general and inclined his head in invitation, subtly patting his stomach. Ready for round two. Then Eris's attention shifted to Mor, sweeping over her with a disdain that made me see red. Mor only stared blankly at him, bored. Even Vivian was biting her lip, so she knew of what had been done to Mor, when Eris's presence would trigger. Unaware of the meeting that had already occurred, the unholy alliance struck. Asriel was so still, I wasn't sure he was breathing. Whether Mor noticed, whether she knew that though she'd tried to move past the bargain we'd made, the guilt of it still haunted Asriel, she didn't let on. They sat, filling in the final seats. Not one empty chair left. It said enough about Tamlin's plans. I tried not to sag in my chair as the attendants took care of the autumn court, as we all settled. Theisen, as host, began.
Rhysand, you've called this meeting, pushed us to gather sooner than we intended. Now would be the time to explain what is so urgent.
Rhys blinked, slowly.
Surely the invading armies landing on our shores explain enough. So you have called us to do what, exactly?
Helion challenged, bracing his forearms on his muscled, gleaming thighs.
Raise a unified army?
Among other things,
Rhys said mildly.
We...
It was almost the same, the entrance.
Almost the same as that night in my family's old cottage, when the door had shattered and a beast had charged in with the freezing cold and roared at us. He didn't bother with the landing balcony or the escorts. He didn't have an entourage. Like a crack of lightning, vicious as a spring storm, he winnowed into the chamber itself. And my blood went colder than Callias's ice as Tamlin appeared and smiled like a wolf.
Chapter 44. Absolute silence. Absolute stillness. I felt the tremor of magic slide through the room as shield after shield locked into place around each High Lord and his retinue. The one Rhysand had already snapped around us, now reinforcing. Rage laced its essence. Wrath and rage. Even if my mate's face was bored, lazy. I tried to school mine into the cold caution with which Nesta regarded him, or the vague distaste on Moore's. I tried, and failed utterly. I knew his moods, his temper. Here was the High Lord who had shredded those Naga into bloody ribbons. Here was the High Lord who had impaled Amarantha on Lucian's sword and ripped out her throat with his teeth. All of it, gleaming in those green eyes as they fixed on me, on Rhys. Tamlin's teeth were white as crow-picked bones as he smiled broadly. Theisen rose, his captain remaining seated behind him, albeit with a hand on his sword.
We were not expecting you, Tamlin.
Theisen gestured with a slender hand toward his cringing attendants.
Fetch the High Lord a chair.
Tamlin did not tear his gaze from me, from us. His smile turned subdued, yet somehow more unnerving, more vicious. He wore his usual green tunic. No crown, no adornments, no sign of another bandolier to replace the one I'd stolen. Baron drawled,
I will admit, Tamlin, that I am surprised to see you here.
Tamlin didn't alter his focus from me, from every breath I took.
Rumor claims your allegiance now lies elsewhere.
Tamlin's gaze shifted, but down. To the ring on my finger.
To the tattoo adorning my right hand, flowing beneath the glittering pale blue sleeve of my gown.
Then it rose, right to that crown I'd picked for myself. I didn't know what to say, what to do with my body, my breathing. No more masks, no more lies and deceptions. The truth, now sprawled bare and open before him. What I'd done in my rage, the lies I'd fed him, the people and land I'd laid vulnerable to Highburn. And now that I'd returned to my family, my mate. My molten wrath had cooled into something sharp-edged and brittle. The attendants hauled over a chair, setting it between one of Baron's sons and Helion's entourage. Neither looked thrilled about it, though they weren't stupid enough to physically recoil as Tamlin sat. He said nothing. Not a word. Helion waved a scar-flecked hand.
Let's get on with it, then.
Thiessen cleared his throat. No one looked toward him. Not as Tamlin surveyed the hand Rhys had resting on my sparkling knee. The loathing in Tamlin's eyes practically simmered. No one, not even Amarantha, had ever looked at me with such hatred. No. Amarantha hadn't really known me. Her loathing had been superficial. Driven from a personal history that poisoned everything. Tamlin. Tamlin knew me, and now hated every inch of what I was. He opened his mouth, and I braced myself.
It would seem congratulations are in order.
The words were flat, flat and yet sharp as his claws, currently hidden beneath his golden skin. I said nothing. Rhys only held Tamlin's stare, held it with a face like ice, and yet utter rage roiled beneath it. Cataclysmic rage, surging and writhing down the bond between us. But my mate addressed Thiessen, who had reclaimed his seat, yet seemed far from any sort of ease.
We can discuss the matter at hand later.
Tamlin said calmly,
Don't stop on my account.
The light in Rhysand's eyes guttered, as if a hand of darkness wiped away those stars. But he reclined in his chair, withdrawing his hand from my knee to trace idle circles on his seat's wooden arm.
I'm not in the business of discussing our plans with enemies.
Helion, across the reflection pool, grinned like a lion.
No. Tamlin said with equal ease. You're just in the business of fucking them.
Every thought and sound eddied out of my head. Cassian, Azrael, and Mor were still as death, their fury rippling off them in silent waves. But whether Tamlin noticed or cared that three of the deadliest people in this room were currently contemplating his demise, he didn't let on. Rhys shrugged, smiling faintly.
Seems a far less destructive alternative to war. And yet here you are, having started it in the first place.
Rhysand's blink was the only sign of his confusion. A claw slid out of Tamlin's knuckle. Calais tensed, a hand drifting to the arm of Vivian's chair, as if he'd throw himself in front of it. But Tamlin only dragged that claw lightly down the carved arm of his own chair, as he'd once dragged them down my skin. He smiled as if he knew precisely what memory it triggered, but said to my mate,
If you hadn't stolen my bride away in the night, Rhysand,
I wouldn't have been forced to take such drastic measures to get her back.
I said quietly, "The sun was shining when I left you." Those green eyes slid to me, glazed and foreign. He let out a low snort, then looked away again. Dismissal. Kalias asked, "Why are you here, Tamlin?" Tamlin's claw dug into the wood, puncturing deep, even as his voice remained mild. I had no doubt that gesture was meant for me, too.
"I bartered access to my lands to get back the woman I love from a sadist who plays with minds as if they're toys. I meant to fight Highburn, to find a way around the bargain I made with the king once she was back. Only Rhysand and his cabal had turned her into one of them, and she delighted in ripping open my territory for Highburn to invade, all for a petty grudge, either her own or her master's." "You don't get to rewrite the narrative," I breathed. "You don't get to spin this to your advantage."
Tamlin only angled his head at Rhys.
"When you fuck her, have you ever noticed that little noise she makes right before she climaxes?"
Heat stained my cheeks. This wasn't outright battle, but a steady, careful shredding of my dignity, my credibility. Baron beamed, delighted, while Eris carefully monitored. Rhys turned his head, looking me over from head to toe, then back to Tamlin, a storm about to be unleashed. But it was Asriel who said, his voice like cold death,
"Be careful how you speak about my high lady."
Surprise flashed in Tamlin's eyes, then vanished. Vanished, swallowed by pure fury as he realized what that tattoo coating my hand was for.
"It was not enough to sit at my side, was it?"
A hateful smile curled his lips.
"You once asked me if you'd be my high lady, and when I said no..."
A low laugh.
"Perhaps I underestimated you. Why serve in my court when you could rule in his?"
Tamlin at last faced the other gathered high lords and their retinues.
"They peddle tales of defending our land in peace, and yet she came to my lands and laid them bare for Highburn. She took my high priestess and warped her mind, after she shattered her bones for spite. And if you're asking yourself what happened to that human girl who went under the mountain to save us, look to the male sitting beside her. Ask what he stands to gain, what they stand to gain from this war, or lack of it. Would we fight Highburn, only to find ourselves with a queen and king of Prithian? She's proved her ambition, and you saw how he was more than happy to serve Amarantha to remain unscathed."
It was an effort not to snarl, not to grip the arms of my chair and roar at him. Rhys let out a dark laugh.
"Well played, Tamlin. You're learning."
Ire contorted Tamlin's face at the condescension, but he faced Kalias.
"You asked why I'm here? I might ask the same of you."
He jerked his chin at the High Lord of Winter, at Vivian, the few other members of their retinue who had remained silent.
"You mean to tell me that after Under the Mountain, you can stomach working with him?"
A finger flung in Rhysand's direction.
I wanted to rip that finger right off Tamlin's hand and feed it to the Midengard worm.
The silvery glow about Kalias dulled. Even Vivian seemed to dim.
"We came here to decide that for ourselves."
Moore was staring at her friend in quiet question. Vivian, for the first time since we'd arrived, did not look toward her, only at her mate. Rhys said softly to them, to everyone,
"I had no involvement in that, none."
Kalias's eyes flared like blue flame.
"You stood beside her throne while the order was given."
I watched, stomach twisting, as Rhys's golden skin paled.
"I tried to stop it." "Tell that to the parents of the 2 dozen younglings she butchered.
Callias said.
That you tried.
I had forgotten. Forgotten that bit of Amarantha's despicable history. It had happened while I was still at the Spring Court. A report one of Lucian's contacts at the Winter Court managed to smuggle out. Of 24 children killed by the Blight. By Amarantha. Rhys's mouth tightened.
There is not one day that passes when I don't remember it.
He said to Callias, to Vivian, to their companions.
Not one day.
I hadn't known. He had told me once, all those months ago, that there were memories he could not bring himself to share, even with me. I had assumed it was only in regard to what Amarantha had done to him, not what he might have been forced to witness, too, forced to endure, bound and trapped, and standing by, leashed to Amarantha while she ordered the murder of those children.
Remembering, Callias said, doesn't bring them back, does it?
No, Rhys said plainly. No, it doesn't. And I'm now fighting to make sure it never happens again.
Vivian glanced between her husband and Rhys.
I was not present under the mountain, but I would hear, High Lord, how you tried to stop her.
Pain tightened her face. She, too, had been unable to prevent it while she guarded her small slice of the territory. Rhys said nothing. Baron snorted.
Finally speechless, Rhysand?
I put a hand on Rhys's arm. I had no doubt Tamlin marked it, and I didn't care. I said to my mate, not bothering to keep my voice down, I believe you.
Says the woman,
Baron countered,
who gave an innocent girl's name in her stead, for Amarantha to butcher as well.
I blocked out the words, the memory of Claire. Rhys swallowed. I tightened my grip on his arm. His voice was rough as he said to Callias,
when your people rebelled.
They had, I recalled. Winter had rebelled against Amarantha. And the children? That had been Amarantha's answer. Her punishment for the disobedience.
She was furious. She wanted you dead, Callias.
Vivian's face drained of color. Rhys went on.
I convinced her that it would serve little purpose.
Who knew? Baron mused. That a cock could be so persuasive.
Father,
Eris's voice was low with warning. For Cassian, Asriel, Mor, and I had fixed our gazes upon Baron, and none of us were smiling. Perhaps Eris would be High Lord sooner than he planned. But Rhys went on to Callias.
She backed off the idea of killing you. Your rebels were dead. I convinced her it was enough. I thought it was the end of it.
His breathing hitched slightly.
I only found out when you did. I think she viewed my defense of you as a warning sign. She didn't tell me any of it. And she kept me confined. I tried to break into the minds of the soldiers she sent, but her damper on my power was too strong to hold them, and it was already done.
She sent a Demadi with them, too.
He faltered. The children's minds, they'd been shattered. Rhys swallowed.
I think she wanted you to suspect me, to keep us from ever allying against her.
What he must have witnessed within those soldiers' minds.
Where did she confine you?
The question came from Vivian, her arms wrapped around her middle. I wasn't entirely ready for it when Rhys said,
her bedroom.
My friends did not hide their rage, their grief at the details he'd kept even from them.
Stories and words,
Tamlin said, lounging in his chair.
Is there any proof?
Proof?
Cassian snarled, half rising in his seat, wings starting to flare.
No.
Rhys cut in as Mor blocked Cassian with an arm, forcing him to sit. Rhys added to Callias,
but I swear it. Upon my mate's life. His hand at last rested atop mine. For the first time since I'd known him, Reese's skin was clammy. I reached down the bond, even as Reese held Calias's stare. I didn't have any words, only myself, only my soul, as I curled up against his towering shields of black adamant. He'd known what coming here, presented just as we were, would cost him, what he might have to reveal beyond the wings he loved so dearly. Tamlin rolled his eyes. It took every scrap of restraint to keep me from lunging for him, from ripping out those eyes. But whatever Calias read in Reese's face, his words. He pinned Tamlin with a hard stare as he asked again, "Why are you here, Tamlin?" A muscle flickered in Tamlin's jaw. "I am here to help you fight against Highburn." "Bullshit," Cassian muttered. Tamlin glowered at him, Cassian folding his wings in neatly as he leaned back in his chair once more, just offered a crooked grin in return. "You will forgive us," Thiessen interrupted gracefully, "if we are doubtful and hesitant to share any plans." "Even when I have information on Highburn's movements?"
Silence. Tarquin, across the pool, watched and listened. Either because he was the youngest of them, or perhaps he knew some advantage lay in letting us battle it out ourselves. Tamlin smiled at me.
"Why do you think I invited them to the house? Into my lands?"
He let out a low snarl, and I felt Reese tensing as Tamlin said to me,
"I once told you I would fight against tyranny, against that sort of evil. Did you think you were enough to turn me from that?"
His teeth shone white as bone.
"It was so easy for you to call me a monster, despite all I did for you, for your family."
A sneer toward Nesta, who was frowning with distaste.
"Yet you witnessed all that he did under the mountain, and still spread your legs for him. Fitting, I suppose. He whored for Amarantha for decades. Why shouldn't you be his whore in return?"
"Watch your mouth," Moore snapped.
I was having difficulty swallowing, breathing. Tamlin ignored her wholly and waved a hand toward Rhysand's wings.
"I sometimes forget what you are. Have the masks come off now, or is this another ploy?"
"You're beginning to become tedious, Tamlin," Helion said, propping his head on a hand.
"Take your lover's spat elsewhere, and let the rest of us discuss this war. You'd be all too happy for war, considering how well you made out in the last one."
"No one says war can't be lucrative," Helion countered.
Tamlin's lip curled in a silent snarl that made me wonder if he'd gone to Helion to break my bargain with Reese, if Helion had refused.
"Enough," Calias said. "We have our opinions on how the conflict with Highburn should be dealt with."
Those glacial eyes hardened as he again took in Tamlin.
"Are you here as an ally of Highburn or Prithian?"
The mocking, hateful gleam faded into granite resolve.
"I stand against Highburn."
"Prove it,"
Helion goaded. Tamlin lifted his hand and a stack of papers appeared on the little table beside his chair.
"Charts of armies, ammunition, caches of Fabane. Everything carefully gleaned these months."
All of this directed at me, as I refused to so much as lower my chin. My back ached from keeping it so straight, a twinge of pain flanking either side of my spine.
"Noble as it sounds," Helion went on, "who is to say that information is correct, or that you aren't Highburn's agent, trying to mislead us? Who is to say that Rhysand and his cronies are not agents of Highburn? All of this a ruse to get you to yield without realizing it."
Nesta murmured,
You can't be serious.
Moore gave my sister a look as if to say that he certainly was.
If we need to ally against Highburn,
Thiessen said,
you are doing a good job of convincing us not to band together, Tamlin.
I am simply warning you that they might present the guise of honesty and friendship, but the fact remains that he warmed Amarantha's bed for 50 years, and only worked against her when it seemed the tide was turning. I'm warning you that while he claims his own city was attacked by Highburn, they made off remarkably well, as if they'd been anticipating it. Don't think he wouldn't sacrifice a few buildings and lesser fairies to lure you into an alliance, into thinking you had a common enemy.
Why is it that only the Night Court got word about the attack on Adriata, and were the only ones to arrive in time to play savior?
They received word, Varian cut in coolly, because I warned them of it.
Tarquin whipped his head to his cousin, brows high with surprise.
Perhaps you are working with them too,
Tamlin said to the Prince of Adriata.
You're next in line, after all. You're insane, I breathed to Tamlin as Varian bared his teeth. Do you hear what you're saying?
I pointed toward Nesta.
Highburn turned my sisters into Fae after your bitch of a priestess sold them out.
Perhaps Ianthe's mind was already in Rhysand's thrall. And what a tragedy to remain young and beautiful.
You're a good actress. I'm sure the trait runs in the family.
Nesta let out a low laugh.
If you want someone to blame for all of this, she said to Tamlin, perhaps you should first look in the mirror.
Tamlin snarled at her.
Cassian snarled right back. Watch it. Tamlin looked between my sister and Cassian, his gaze lingering on Cassian's wings tucked in behind him, snorted.
Seems like other preferences run in the Archeron family, too.
My power began to rumble, a behemoth rising up, yawning awake. What do you want? I hissed. An apology? For me to crawl back into your bed and play nice little wife?
Why should I want spoiled goods returned to me?
My cheeks heated. Tamlin growled. The moment you let him fuck you like an Anne. One heartbeat, the poisoned words were spewing from his mouth, where fangs lengthened. Then they stopped. Tamlin's mouth simply stopped emitting sounds. He shut his mouth, opened it, tried again. No sound. Not even a snarl came out. There was no smile on Rhysand's face, not a glint of that irreverent amusement as he rested his head against the back of his chair.
The gasping fish look is a good one for you, Tamlin.
The others, who had been watching with disdain and amusement and boredom, now turned to my mate, now possessed a shadow of fear in their eyes as they realized who and what exactly sat amongst them. Brethren, and yet not. Tamlin was a High Lord, as powerful as any of them, except for the one at my side. Rhys was different from them, as humans were to Fae. They forgot it sometimes, how deep that well of power went, what manner of power Rhys bore. But as Rhysand ripped away Tamlin's ability to speak, they remembered.
Chapter 45. Only my friends didn't seem surprised. Tamlin's eyes were green flame, golden light flickering around him as his magic sought to wrestle free from Rhysand's control, as he tried and tried to speak.
If you want proof that we're not scheming with Highburn, Rhysand said blandly to them all, consider the fact that it would be far less time-consuming to slice into your minds and make you do my bidding.
Only Baron was stupid enough to scoff. Aerys was just angling his body in his chair, blocking the path to his mother.
Yet here I am,
Rhysand went on, not deigning to give Baron a glance of acknowledgement.
Here we all are.
Absolute silence. Then Tarquin, silent and watchful, cleared his throat. I waited for it, for the blow that would surely doom us. We were thieves who had deceived him. We had come into his house in peace and stolen from him, had ripped into their minds to ensure our success. But Tarquin said to me, to Rhysand,
despite Varian's unsanctioned warning,
a glare at his cousin, who didn't so much as look sorry about it,
you were the only ones who came to help. The only ones. And yet you asked for nothing in return. Why?
Rhys's voice was a bit hoarse as he asked,
isn't that what friends do?
A subtle, quiet offer. Tarquin took him in, then me, and the others.
I rescind the blood rubies. Let there be no debts between us.
Don't expect Amryn to return hers,
Cassian muttered.
She's grown attached to it.
I could have sworn a smile tugged on Varian's mouth, but Rhys faced Tamlin, whose own mouth remained shut, his eyes still livid, and my mate said to him,
I believe you, that you will fight for Prithian.
Callias didn't appear so convinced. Neither did Helion. Rhys loosened his grasp on Tamlin's voice. I only knew because a low snarl slipped from him. But Tamlin made no move to attack, to even speak.
War is upon us, Rhysand declared. I have no interest in wasting energy arguing amongst ourselves.
The better man. Male.
His restraint, his choice of words, all of it a careful portrayal of reason and power. But Rhysand, I knew he meant what he said. Even if Tamlin had been a part of killing his own family, even if he had played his part in Highburn, for our home, for Prithian, he'd set it aside. A sacrifice that would harm no one but his own soul. But Baron said,
you may be inclined to believe him, Rhysand, but as someone who shares a border with his court, I am not so easily swayed.
A wry look.
Perhaps my errant son can clarify. Pray, where is he?
Even Tamlin looked toward us, toward me. Helping to guard our city, was all I said. Not a lie, not entirely. Eris snorted and surveyed Nesta, who stared back at him with steel in her face.
Pity you didn't bring the other sister. I hear our little brother's mate is quite the beauty.
If they knew Elaine was Lucian's mate. It was now another avenue, I realized with no small amount of horror. Another way to strike at the youngest brother they hated so fiercely, so unreasonably. Eris's bargain with us had not included protection of Lucian. My mouth went dry. But Moor replied smoothly,
you still certainly like to hear yourself talk, Eris. Good to know some things don't change over the centuries.
Eris's mouth curled into a smile at the words, the careful game of pretending that they had not seen each other in years.
Good to know that after 500 years... you still dress like a slut.
One moment, Asriel was seated. The next, he'd blasted through Eris's shield with a flare of blue light and tackled him backward, wood shattering beneath them.
Shit,
Cassian spat, and was instantly there, and met a wall of blue. Asriel had sealed them in, and as his scarred hands wrapped around Eris's throat, Rhys said,
enough.
Asriel squeezed, Eris thrashing beneath him. No physical brawling. There had been a rule against that. But Asriel, with whatever power those shadows gave him.
Enough, Asriel,
Rhys ordered.
Perhaps those shadows that now slid and eddied around the Shadow Singer hid him from the wrath of the binding magic. The others made no move to interfere, as if wondering the same. Asriel dug his knee, and all his weight, into Eris's gut. He was silent, utterly silent as he ripped the air from Eris's body. Baron's flames struck the blue shield over and over, but the fire skittered off and fizzled out on the water. Any that escaped were torn to shreds by shadows.
"Call off your overgrown bat,"
Baron ordered Rhys.
Rhys was enjoying it, bargain with Eris or no, could have ended it seconds ago. He gave me a glance as if to say so, and an invitation.
I rose on surprisingly steady knees, felt all of them tense. Tamlin's gaze like a brand as I walked toward the Shadow Singer, my sparkling gown hissing along the floor behind me, as I put a tattooed hand on the hard, near-invisible curve of the shield and said, "Come, Asriel." Asriel stopped. Eris gasped for air as those scarred hands loosened, as Asriel turned his face toward me. The frozen rage there rooted me to the spot. But beneath it, I could almost see the images that haunted him. The hand Mor had yanked away, her weeping, distraught face as she had screamed at Rhys. And now, behind us, Mor was shaking in her chair, pale and shaking. I only offered my hand to Asriel.
"Come, sit beside me."
Nesta had already moved her seat, and an extra chair appeared beside mine. I didn't let my hand tremble as I kept it extended, and waited. Asriel's eyes slid to Eris, the High Lord's son panting beneath him. And the Shadow Singer leaned down to whisper something in his ear that made Eris blanch further. But the shield dropped. The shadows lightened into sunshine. Baron struck, only for his fire to bounce off a hard barrier of my own. I lifted my gaze to the High Lord of Autumn. "That's twice now we've handed you your asses. I'd think you'd be sick of the humiliation." Halion laughed, but my attention returned to Asriel, who took my still-offered hand and rose. The scars were rough against my fingers, but his skin was like ice. Pure ice. Mor opened her mouth to say something to Asriel, but Cassian put a hand on her bare knee and shook his head. I led the Shadow Singer to the empty chair beside mine, then walked to the table myself to pour him a glass of wine. No one spoke until I offered it to him and sat down. "They are my family," I said at the raised brows I received for my waiting on him. Tamlin just shook his head in disgust and finally slid that claw back into his hand. But I met Eris's fuming gaze, my voice as cold as Asriel's face as I said, "I don't care if we were allies in this war. If you insult my friend again, I won't stop him the next time." Only Eris knew how far that alliance went. Information that could damn this meeting if either side revealed it. Information that could get him wiped off the earth by his father. Mor was staring and staring at Asriel, who refused to look at her, who refused to do anything but give Eris that death gaze. Eris wisely averted his eyes and said, "Apologies, Morgan." His father actually gawked at the words, but something like approval shone on the Lady of Autumn's face as her eldest son settled himself once more. Theisen rubbed his temples.
"This does not bode well."
But Helion smirked at his retinue, crossing an ankle over a knee and flashing those powerful, sleek thighs.
"Looks like you owe me 10 gold marks.
It seemed like we weren't the only ones who'd placed bets, even if not one of Helion's entourage answered his mocking smile with one of their own. Helion waved a hand, and the stacks of papers Tamlin had compiled drifted over to him on a phantom wind. With a snap of his fingers, scar-flecked from swordplay, Other stacks appeared before every chair in the room, including my own.
Replicas,
he said without looking up as he leafed through the documents. A handy trick for a male whose trove was not in gold, but in knowledge. No one made any move to touch the papers before us. Helion clicked his tongue.
If all of this is true,
he announced, Tamlin snarling at the haughty tone,
then I'd suggest two things. First, destroying Highburn's caches of Feybane. We won't last long if they've made them into so many versatile weapons. It's worth the risk to destroy them.
Callias arched a brow.
How would you suggest we do that? We'll handle it,
Tarquin offered. Varian nodded.
We owe them for Adriata,
Theson said.
There is no need.
We all blinked at him, even Tamlin. The High Lord of Dawn just folded his hands in his lap.
A master tinkerer of mine has been waiting for the past several hours. I would like for her to now join us.
Before anyone could reply, a high fey female appeared at the edge of the circle. She bowed so quickly that I barely glimpsed more than her light brown skin and long silken black hair. She wore clothes similar to Theson's, and yet, her sleeves had been rolled up to the forearms, the tunic unbuttoned to her chest, and her hand. I guessed who she was before she rose. Her right hand was solid gold, mechanical, the way Lucian's was. It clicked and whirred quietly, drawing the eye of every immortal in the room as she faced her High Lord. Theson smiled in warm welcome. But her face... I wondered if Amryn had modeled her own features after a similar bloodline when she'd bound herself into her fey body. The sharp chin, round cheeks, and stunning up-tilted eyes. But where Amryn's were that unholy silver, this female's were dark as onyx, and aware, utterly aware of us gawking at her hand, her arrival, as she said to Theson,
My lord.
Theson gestured to the female standing tall before the assembled group.
Nuan is one of my most skilled craftspeople.
Rhys leaned back in his seat, brows rising with recognition at the name, and jerked his chin to Baron, to Eris.
You might know her as the person responsible for granting your errant son, as you called him, the ability to use his left eye after Amarantha removed it.
Nuan nodded once in confirmation, her lips pressing into a thin line as she took in Lucian's family. She didn't so much as turn in Tamlin's direction, and he certainly didn't bother to acknowledge her, regardless of the past binding them, their mutual friend.
And what has this to do with the Feybane?
Helion demanded. Theson's lover seethed at the High Lord of Day's tone, but one glance from Theson had the male relaxing. Nuan turned, her dark hair slipping over a shoulder as she studied Helion, and did not seem impressed.
Because I found a solution for it.
Theson waved a hand.
We heard rumors of Feybane being used in this war. Used in the attack on your city, Resand. We thought to look into the issue before it became a deadly weakness for all of us.
He nodded to Nuan.
Beyond her unparalleled tinkering, she is a skilled alchemist.
Nuan crossed her arms, the sun glinting off her metal hand.
Thanks to samples attained after the attack in Valaris, I was able to create an antidote of sorts.
How did you get those samples?
Cassian demanded. A flush crept over Nuan's cheeks.
I heard the rumors and assumed Lucian Vancera would be residing there after what happened.
She still didn't look to Tamlin, who remained silent and brooding.
I managed to contact him a few days ago. Asked him to send samples.
He did and did not tell you. she added quickly to Rhysand. Because he did not want to raise your hopes. Not until I'd found a solution.
No wonder he'd been so eager to head alone into Valaris that day he'd gone to help us research. I shot a look at Rhys. Seems like Lucian can still play the fox.
Rhys didn't look at me, though his lips twitched as he replied,
Indeed.
Nuon went on. The Mother has provided us with everything we need on this earth, so it has been a matter of finding what exactly she gave us in Prithian to combat a material from Highburn capable of wiping out our powers. Helion shifted with impatience, that glistening white fabric slipping over his muscled chest. Thiessen read that impatience too and said,
Nuon has been able to quickly create a powder for us to ingest in drink, food, however you please. It grants immunity from the Feybane. I already have workers in 3 of my cities manufacturing as much of it as possible to hand out to our unified armies.
Even Rhys seemed impressed at the stealth, the unveiling.
I'm surprised you didn't have a grand reveal of your own today, I quipped down the bond.
Cruel, beautiful High Lady, he purred, eyes twinkling.
Tarquin asked,
But what of physical objects made from Feybane? They possessed gauntlets at the battle to smash through shields.
He jerked his chin to Rhys.
And when they attacked your own city.
Against that, Nuon said, you only have your wits to protect you. She did not break Tarquin's stare, and he straightened, as if surprised she did so. The compound I've made will only protect you, your powers, from being rendered void by the Feybane. Perhaps if you are pierced with a weapon tipped in Feybane, having the compound in your system will negate its impact. Quiet fell. Baron said,
And we're supposed to trust you?
A look at Thiessen, then at Nuon.
With this substance, we're to blindly ingest.
Would you rather face Highburn without any power?
Thiessen demanded.
My master alchemists and tinkerers are no fools.
No,
Baron said, frowning.
But where did she come from? Who are you?
The last bit directed at Nuon. I am the daughter of 2 High Fae from Xi'an, who moved here to give their children a better life, if that is what you are demanding to know. Nuon answered tightly. Helion demanded of Baron,
What does this have to do with anything?
Baron shrugged.
If her family is from Xi'an, which I'll have you remember fought for the Loyalists, then whose interests does she serve?
Helion's amber eyes flashed. Thiessen cut in sharply,
I will have you remember, Baron, that my own mother hailed from Xi'an, and a large majority of my court did as well. Be careful what you say.
Before Baron could hiss a retort, Nuon said to the Lord of Autumn, her chin high, I am a child of Prithian. I was born here on this land, as your sons were. Baron's face darkened.
Watch your tone, girl.
She doesn't have to watch anything, I cut in. Not when you fling that sort of horseshit at her.
I looked to the alchemist. I will take your antidote. Baron rolled his eyes, but Eris said,
Father.
Baron lifted a brow.